What is up, everybody? This is Marshall from Limited Resources, and you are listening to Seven Land Hand.
It's Seven Land Hand!
Brought to you by Good Game St. James.
Now in Cannington.
Welcome to the birthing pod known as Seven Land Hand. Wipe off the afterbirth and ponder today's show, where we'll dig through time into the dark depths of modern. We'll play a new version of the MTG card quiz, bust an Aaron Gray Modern Masters booster, and then whistle a seething song in a vault of whispers. Oh, and if you have a sword of a meek, we'll answer the question, will a second sunrise just bring another disappointing morning glory? All on Seven Land Hand! Ooh, that music was running out fast. All right, today, no mental missteps, as I'm joined by two modern genii. Banned from most establishments in the country, it's Rob Goblin Guide Grimsey.
Woo!
Hello.
He's wooing himself now. It's Rob Grimsey!
Someone's got to.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you've got to be confident, right? That's a good start.
Yeah. And the other voice in the room is Riley Path to Exile Everts.
Hello.
So you're on theme there, aren't we? Goblin Guide, Path to Exile. Have I covered everything that's on the banned list? I don't think the Goblin one is, though, is it?
No, Goblin Guide isn't.
Path to Exile.
Not yet. It's the scariest card,
it's
man.
Pretty
no one
terrifying.
Wants to see the turn one Goblin Guide, yeah.
Oh, talking about scary cards, we've got some listener feedback later on about terrifying cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel about... Oh, should I do it? Oh, I can't remember what the name of the card is. Fuck it. Anyway, how have you been?
good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, what have you been up to this week in gaming?
Riley, what have you got, man?
Gaming? I don't know. I managed to draw my entire deck in a game of Command the other day by sacrificing Sapperlings. That was pretty awesome.
Do you have any cards left in this deck? Was this like a one-card deck?
What? My Sapperling deck?
No, you said you're drawing the rest of the deck. This could be any number of cards.
Commander, 100 cards. Single, you know, everyone knows what Commander is. It's the best format.
Oh, let's not start. We're
widely
doing,
regarded.
Let's learn Modern and then Commander.
I'll stick to our Modern stories. I think Rob...
All right, so this week in gaming. So two things. Firstly, Star Realms. Have you guys heard of this game, Star Realms?
Not until we spoke to you pre-show.
Okay, so there's two things. It links with Magic here. So firstly, it's designed by two Magic Hall of Famers. So Darwin Castle, Rob Doherty, like famous Hall of Fame Magic guys, basically unbeatable through like late 90s, famous guys.
So like Pro Tour players.
Pro Tour Hall of Fame players. So right. Not just players, but Hall of Famers. So these guys, they got some
knowing nod to Riley there.
Exactly,
all right,
So... designed by these guys, and it's the second part of the game is it's like a draft. So if you're into Magic drafting, it's effectively like you're doing a live draft. So you pick your cards in the out of the middle of the table, like each pack, each turn, and then you draft them into your deck that you're sort of playing while you draft. So if you're a person that likes Magic drafting, it's an amazing style game.
No, okay, and it's in the Star Realm, sounds like a spacey vibe.
It is, absolutely. I mean, the theme is not quite as important as the mechanics of the game.
Who are you talking to? How are the pictures?
Oh, man, they're beautiful. I've actually got some art somewhere. We'll have a look later on, but they're amazing.
All right, yeah, good for an audio podcast. What have you been up to, Riley? Anything?
A whole lot of work.
No, don't be like that. We've been playing the crap out of XCOM.
Oh, my God, man. Yeah, XCOM is awesome.
Yeah, I know. That's coming up in... 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks.
Two weeks. That's the kind of homework we're doing these days. That's amazing.
I'm excited. It's going to be really good.
We've got preparation.
I know. This is off the hook. This is like we've gone nerdy boy in class, and we're doing our homework properly. There's no more scribbling on the notes as we're entering the class to do the podcast. This is XCOM, 4 weeks of rehearsals. So I've talked it up way too much now, haven't I? But we've got four of us on that show coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
There we go.
Just by numbers.
Me, Riley, Justin, and Matt. Oh, yeah, Matt.
Quantity over quality, you reckon?
Matt always keeps us in line.
Buster Booster!
Those are the guitars I wanted you to do, Rob. Anyway.
Good.
Next time.
It's a Buster Booster, but this week, something different. We're not just going to bust a Fate Reforged pack or something like that, because we're talking modern. We've got Mr. Aaron Graham has built an official, what he's written on the front is official Modern Masters 2017 edition.
Ah, awesome.
So it's a legit thing. It comes in a clear pack. The official Modern Masters 2017 edition is written in pen. But what he's done is he's built us a booster to bust. So, but on a modern theme. So
what I'm liking about this is it's giving us a bit of an insight into Aaron as well.
The mind
not
of Aaron
just
Graham.
Modern,
yeah.
But we're going to bust this, and this is going to be give us an insight into the deep mind.
We'll
of
learn
Graham.
More about him.
Well, it's interesting that he's put 2017 edition on there, because that maybe he's making some predictions that these cards of current that will be in modern come 2017.
We should write these down. and check.
Yeah. I mean, he could be confused about what year it is as well. I mean,
that's that true.
No, yeah. Like, it's a possibility.
Last time I did see him, he looked like a homeless man.
That's true. I mean, the hair really.
I don't know. I don't know what's happening. Needless to say, he'll be listening to this segment. So,
perfect.
Hello, Aaron. All right. Oh crap, he's. It's glued up well and good. All right, here we go. Busting a booster.
Woo!
Has not got the new pack smell.
That's disappointing.
It's got a, out, yeah.
It did say it came from Aaron's personal collection, so it smells like homeless man magic cards.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'll just find out which is the front. I think it's that one. All right, so do you know the routine on this? We're busting the booster. The same. It's not. It's a completely original idea. Hasn't been stolen from any other podcast.
Never done before.
I've never heard it anywhere else.
Absolutely not.
It seems like the thickest 15 cards ever. So you might put like 40 in here.
I mean, it's 2017. Maybe 2017 they're putting 20 cards in boosters.
Value. Yeah, we're getting more value. All right. Let me know how you feel about these cards because they're all foreign to me. All right.
Feel good.
Starting off, first card is Viscera Seer. Just a swamp for a creature who's a vampire wizard. That's pretty cool. I haven't seen this card before.
This is a really good card, one for a one.
Sacrifice a creature, you get to scry one. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. How do you feel about this card?
Fantastic card. I hate it because it's always played against me, and it's just so good.
From N11 as well, I should add.
He's had a bit of an up-and-down history, this little fella, the old Viscera Seer. Came in very, very popular in the early versions of Malira Pot. So it was one of the key combinations with Viscera Seer, Malira, and then any creature with Persist to make infinite combo.
Yep.
So used to be in huge demand, played in Modern maybe a year or so ago. And then unfortunately, as the decks moved away from that combo-centric and gone towards like a more mid-rangey, it dropped out of favour. And now with Birthing Pod being eventually banned, this poor guy, I think, is relegated to the unplayable areas. At the moment.
So we're choosing our favourite. I mean, it might just end up that we'll get the rare at the end. If it's more interesting. So is that not a high pick then? Because it's
I would say this is a
without
card where you need a like on its own, not great. It needs to be a combo with something else. So it depends what's in this 2017 format that Aaron's put together. Basically.
2017 format.
If we were doing a modern draft, how highly would you pick that?
If we're modern drafting a format full of persist guys, I would probably pick this up, but like you wouldn't be first picking this card in any world I can see.
Does the sacrifice creature scry one ever get used?
Oh yeah,
it does.
That's the whole point.
It is.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
sure.
So
that seems
so.
Expensive.
You're playing with those creatures. So the way it works is you have like a persist creature essentially. So persist is the mechanic that when the creature dies, if it doesn't have any counters on it, it comes back to life with a -1 counter on it again.
Okay.
So and you have these creatures that have end of the battlefield effects basically. So you can play it, have the effect, then you can use your seer, sacrifice the guy. Get him back again and get like a second copy of that effect.
Okay.
So the classic ones are Murderous Redcap, which when it comes in does 2 damage, and Kitchen Finks, which when it comes in...
I remember Murderous Redcap from the previous Modern Masters release, before Aaron...
Exactly.
Before Aaron got into designing it.
Yeah, before Aaron did. All right. Well, moving on to the next card is Searing Blaze, which costs 2 mountains and is an instant. Searing Blaze deals 1 damage to target player and 1 damage to target creature that player controls. It's also got a landfall effect, which you might have to run us through. If you had a land enter the battlefield under your control this turn, Searing Blaze deals 3 damage to that player and 3 damage to that creature instead. So you can potentially do 6 damage for 2 cost.
Mm.
Okay, that seems like good value.
Yeah, see, it's on the surface, it seems like a pretty solid card.
Okay, we'll take us below the surface then, Riley.
Oh,
what's happening
with
that?
Nothing, it's just more solid. It's all solid all the way through.
Yeah.
It's a really good card.
Searing Blaze, very, very good. I mean, if you're a burn player at heart, like, this is exactly where you want to be. Like, not only... So you've got to consider the landfall aspect of this. So if you don't have landfall, just does 1 damage to a creature, not too great. 1 damage to a player, not too great. But if you manage to trigger landfall, so if you get a land coming in that turn, you're going to be doing 3, which is going to kill most things in sort of a modern-esque format, and also deal 3 to the face, which in a burn deck is perfect, because what you don't want to be doing is wasting your burn spells killing a creature. This one lets you kill the guy and burn them to the face in one go.
Yeah, and it's not the trickiest condition to move either, because
you'd
hope that most turns you're playing a card a land anyway.
Well, especially in Modern, because like the main reason that these are more valuable in Modern than other formats, or like than formats without fetch lands, is that landfall, a fetch land lets you double trigger it. So you can play the fetch land, you get your landfall trigger, then you can crack it, sacrifice it, find another land, and get another trigger. So you can use 2 landfall, you can effectively get landfall in 2 different turns from 1 land.
Yep.
So it's very, very easy to
What's
trigger.
What's the standard version called? I can't remember. Is it Searing Blood?
Searing Blood, yeah.
Yeah.
So Searing Blood's a lot worse because you can't target, you can't use it if they don't have a creature. So this one here, it doesn't matter if they have a guy, you can always play it.
Yep.
Yeah. Searing Blood is.
Searing.
Well, when did that make a last appearance? That wasn't a Mod Masters card. That was in.
That's in standard.
Yeah. I can remember seeing it recently. All right. Better or worse than Viscera Seer?
Better.
Two different sort of decks? All right, better.
A lot better.
Yeah, that's good. You pick this up if you want to play Burn. If you're a guy that just wants to burn dudes, you see this pack one, maybe you grab it, just go all in mono red.
We'll probably get into this later on, but Burn is an easy way to get into Modern, playing the Burn decks.
Absolutely. So it's probably the cheapest way. Anyway.
Okay. Oh, here's a card I recognize. Retraction Helix. One island. It's an instant. Until end of turn, target creature gains... Tap, return target lon land permanent to its owner's hand. Right, Retraction Helix. We've had our fun with that one. That's Born of the Gods, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Fellas?
I'm a big fan. But it only shows up in one modern deck, and that's one of the Jeskai Ascendancy combo decks, isn't it?
Well, and that's only in standard, actually. So it did show up in modern, didn't it? They use Fate Stitcher instead in the modern version. So they use that. They use a Fate Stitcher they pull out of the yard. Whereas in standard, they use the creatures in play basically, and then use Retraction Helix on those. So it is. It gets a bit of standard play. Well, a bit depending how many people play Jeskai Ascendancy combo, which is not that many.
It's diminishing. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be very interesting. I mean, things that do this like bouncing creatures, if it's a format with cards that you want to play and get your own effects. I mean, you can play a creature. Has an end of the battlefield effect. You can retraction helix your own guy and play it again. Like with the seer in this pack and a retraction helix, maybe that's what he's thinking about this format. So this is where the
format changes things. So retraction helix becomes a card which you may use on yourself just to
in the standard combo version, it's used on your own self. So you can use it on your own guys. So to bounce and replay things.
I never played it that way when I drafted.
Okay. So I mean, the obvious straightforward use is you just play it on your guy, tap and bounce their stuff.
Yeah bounce something huge. It's like a blown all mana.
Spend that mana again.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big tempo.
Oh, that's the only way I did it. That could have been like. MTG 101.
That's the obvious use of the card, so that's fair enough for sure.
But yeah, so you're saying like there's plenty of cards which reward you for coming back to the hand and then you're playing them again, you get that enters the battlefield.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you can even have something like a Snapcaster Mage if this is like a modern reprint where you could play your Snapcaster, get your best value card back, Retraction Helix to bounce your own Snapcaster, and then you could play the Snapcaster to play another Retraction Helix. There's lots of little value cards like that in modern. So.
Wow, man. All right, so where's that on the scale of things? You put it in third place at the moment?
Third place at the minute.
Okay.
It needs other things.
Basically. So that's a junky card for Aaron Graham's set release, yeah?
Yeah. We'll see what comes next. It could be amazing if the next ones are all cards.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what else is in there.
All right, well, how do you feel about a land card, Simic Growth Chamber? Simic Growth Chamber comes into play tapped. When Simic Growth Chamber comes into play, return a land you control to its owner's hand. Tap, and you can tap it and add, two mana. Add a forest and an island to your mana pool. Now that's worth money right there, isn't it? That's good stuff.
Oh, it helps. You're always going to make your landfall triggers when you're playing the bounce lands, aren't you?
But I'm just thinking tap for two mana. So it's a land card you tap
costs you a land to put it into play, and it comes into play tapped. So you're setting yourself behind little bit for hopefully gaining something a bit later on.
Incrementally, two mana every turn it's on, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not effectively giving you like two mana from this card. It just gives you an extra land in your hand because this gives you two, but you have to bounce another land that would have otherwise been giving you a mana anyway. So if this wasn't a dual land, it only gave one mana, you would effectively still have the two because you'd have the land that you'd played previously.
Yeah.
You didn't have to bounce, and then this.
So it's shit turn. Then.
No, it's good.
No,
I've
got
it from awesome to shit.
You guaranteed two lands without having to have two lands in your hand. So it's great. And also, the combo with this is with Amulet of Vigor. So I don't know if you've seen that Amulet of Vigor combo deck. So if that's in this format, it's a one mana cost artifact. And all it says is that when you have a permanent end of the battlefield tapped, it instead enters the battlefield untapped. So... with your Simic Growth Chamber, for example, you play it, this land, it's meant to come into play tapped, but if you have this amulet, you can use it straight away. So on the very turn that it comes into play, you can make two extra mana.
Right.
So that's if there's that sort of card in the format, it's great.
You can even tap it in response to the trigger and then bounce it back to your hand.
And that's how they do it. So you can use this and the amulet with effects that let you play multiple lands a turn to just generate huge amounts of mana and then
very fast
cards like Primeval Tide.
And it's in the right colours for big stuff as well.
Absolutely. Green is where they want to
be. And what the hell is that? What's that set? The logo on that with the...
I'll be honest with you, I'm so terrible at those sets, I never
remember. Isn't it Dissension? I think it's Dissension.
It could be.
It's 3 hours going all sorts of way.
I think it's Dissension.
It's before my time.
We can check on your list that you printed out.
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
All right, so let's submit growth chatter. All right, well, it looks like we're back to another... No, we're not. Pyretic Ritual. One and a mountain for an instant. Add 3 mountains to your mana pool. And that's from M11. I was going to say it's back to the burn, but... it's not really.
No, this one's different to burn. It's like, it looks red. The graphic almost looks the same as well.
There's lava spraying everywhere. There's a man controlling the lava, but no burning going on.
Mm. So if I'm opening a booster pack for the first ever time I see a Pyretic Ritual, I'm thinking Storm support in this format.
Oh,
this is fantastic. I'm going to be able to get a bunch of rituals. I'm going to be able to slam a Grape Shot or a Empty the Warren, some kind of Storm card.
Yeah, something big
storm
with
effects.
Storm on it. Yeah.
So I like the look
How does a Storm effect work?
So storm effects are for every time you've cast a card that turn, you get to copy that card. So, for example, Grape Shot is a card where when you first play it, it just does 1 damage to target creature or player, which doesn't seem very effective. You know, you play it 1 damage, not great.
Yeah.
But with Storm, for every card that's been cast that turn before it, it does an extra one, so it copies it.
Oh,
so if you're there on 10 life and you manage to then cast 10 spells in one turn, play Grape Shot, then they die.
It counts all of the spells, so it counts... their attempts to counter your spells as well and other things. So it can get up quite quickly.
And it's certainly doable, especially in maybe not so much the Grape Shot version, but with cards like Empty the Warrens, which is a card that costs 4, makes 2 goblins. For that one, you don't need to get all the way up to 10 to kill them. I mean, if you only cast 3 or 4 spells, then you're making 8 or 10 goblins. Then
these are realistic numbers in the modern format.
Yeah, easily. With all the cheap sort of cantripping going on. And in the Storm decks, the whole idea is just building up the stack as much as you can and then casting a Storm card.
And killing them from a position where they thought they were sweet.
Yeah, killing them from nowhere.
And in the constructed version, I mean, it's exceptionally strong. And those can combo off sort of turn 3, you know, usually sometimes maybe turn 2 if they're very lucky, but not really.
Yeah.
So, but in a draft format, you know, you can expect to cast, you know, a few Storm spells. Maybe you can get like 5 or 6 potentially, depending what's in it. And then slam back your Stormer to finish it. So we'll see. Yeah,
because I was listening to episode 24 when we last talked about Modern, and Aaron was talking about how, you know, I think we got down to, you know, you can be on 13 life just by setting up your game.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just like getting
anything happening, just sorting out your mana is...
And that you did it to yourself, that, you know, it's not like anyone else has done anything to you. So if you can rattle off a few spells like that, then...
Exactly. You mentioned Burn before, and that's one of the reasons why Burn is so great. Like, in Modern, you're starting at 15 life before anything happens. You know what I mean? You play one fetch land, you crack it, you have to put it into play untapped. That immediately costs you 3 land to play 1 land. 3 life, sorry, to play 1 land. So very quickly, you're down on sort of 14, 13 life, and then someone just burns you a few times, and you're out of the game. So
yeah, and then the other guy plays a Goblin Guide, and you immediately regret.
You just cry forever, exactly.
All right, so is Pyretic Ritual rating in the cards we've got so far?
It depends on what else is
in
there.
Right.
Depends
on
what you're
super contextual. Like if the next one's a bunch of Storm cards, Pyretic Ritual looks amazing. If it's not, and it's just there to basically gain 1 free mana, then it looks terrible. So
it's really hard to tell.
Well, here's a card that was in the last set of Modern Masters, probably the official set of Modern Masters. Pestermite, 2 and an island. He's a creature who's a fairy rogue. He's got flash, he's flying, and when Pestermite enters the battlefield, you may tap or untap target permanent. Right, and he's a 2-1, so he's a 2-1 flyer who can flash in for 3.
Brilliant.
Use these guys.
This is my boy.
Love it.
This is
love
my
this
boy
card.
Pestermite. Absolutely. Yeah. So I play Splinter Twin, blue-red Splinter Twin or blue-red-black Splinter Twin in Modern. This guy is one of the core cards. I mean, you slam him in. He helps combo with some cards like Splinter Twin. So Splinter Twin's a card that when you put it in play, you can you enchant a creature, you can tap that creature and then make a copy of something. And then this guy here, which can untap, obviously if you put this Splinter Twin on him, you tap him, you can copy itself, which gives you another untapped guy, which you can tap to, I mean, untap your copy again and effectively just make infinite copies. So Pestermite, amazing card. But then, even better than that is when you're not comboing, you can just play it end of turn. They're always scared that you're going to have the combo. They have to be play around
it constantly.
They
have to have an answer for it.
And then you can just slowly beat them to death with the 2-1 flying guy in the air, which is a big way to win. While they're scared, they're thinking, you're going to combo and you just go take two.
It's one of the things in Modern to have stuff in your hand which can, a lot of instants that can instantly deal with something that you think is about to happen.
You have to have answers on you right when you need them. Otherwise, you've probably just lost.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can instantly see the value in Pestermite. All right, cool. We've got wild. I don't know how to say that. Wild Nacatl, but it's not. It's not a cattle. It's a leopard warrior thing. It's a cat warrior.
It's a cat.
Officially.
It is.
One forest for a 1/1. When Wild Nacatl gets +1/+1, as long as Wild Nacatl gets +1/+1, as long as you control a mountain. So it's encouraging you to go green red. Wild Nacatl gets +1/+1 as long as you control a plains. So it's encouraging you to play a plains as well. This has got you covered across loads of bases.
It's pushing
isn't it?
You into Naya. That's what it's for. But it's really good. And all the fetch lands and stuff in modern, it's really easy to meet the conditions.
Because you've got dual lands that are both.
Yep.
The cost, though, is then you're paying a lot of life to get this guy into play. So if you're, say, playing him on turn one with a fetch land to get a green red, say, to trigger one of the abilities, that's cost you 3 life. And then on the second turn, you're going to have to play another fetch land to get the green white land. So it makes him a 3/3 instead of a 2/2. And that's going to cost you another 3. So now you're on 14, but you've got your 3/3 in play. So you can start beating them down.
But
so
he's going to be good. He's going to be good. He's a good late game 1 mana
he's
card, isn't
good
he?
Late game, but like late game.
Not late
you don't
game,
want
mid game.
You don't want to get to the late game with this card. You want to be winning.
Yeah, this is a guy you want to play on turn one and just beat him death as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
But is he a guy you could play? Is a 1/1 on turn one? That's cool.
Yeah. You just slap him down.
Oh, and I'll play a mountain card the next turn.
Exactly.
Sure.
Just
a regular. Yeah, and then he slowly grows.
Yeah, and make him a 3/3 the next turn. You can absolutely.
Yeah. So by round 3, he's. Is a 3/3, so he grows with the game.
Mm.
A high pick?
I think it's good. I mean, I don't think it's anywhere near as good as Pestermite. So if you're going aggressive,
Pestermite seems.
Pestermite's
looks here
fantastic.
Like you can have. Looking at the 7 cards we've seen so far with Wild Nacatl and Searing Blades, looks like we can have a really, really good aggressive green red deck here. With sort of blaze effects, Wild Nacatl. You have your mountains to trigger the Nacatl, make him bigger.
Which is surprising, because Aaron usually rolls blue-white. I don't know if he does that in
modern. I feel that as well. Every single time I play blue control. That's why Pestermite here was be my pick 100%.
All right. Maybe he's just slipped that in early.
It works well with Refraction Helix, too.
Oh, absolutely. There you go.
With the tapping. Okay. Lightning Bolt. 1 mountain. Lightning Bolt deals 3 damage to target creature or player. Instant.
Yep.
That's insane value, isn't it?
I mean, that card's okay, I guess.
I don't know. I reckon it might shop.
You could put it in the deck if you have space, I guess.
You got to fill a few slots.
I know, exactly. Like, I mean, it just does 3 damage for 1 mana. I guess that's reasonable,
right? That seems okay.
That seems awesome.
It's
a fantastic card.
3 damage for 1, and you get the choice between creature or player.
Yep.
So it's not forcing your hand there. It's at instant
speed.
It's brilliant.
Any deck that has mountains in it needs to be playing at least 3 of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the best cards ever printed in any format.
Yep.
So, I mean... Let's go for some Lightning Bolt. That's great. Let's put that right up the top.
It
should
be.
Okay.
That's pick
like it's
1.
It's removal. It's damage. It's what costs 1 mana. That's boom. That's looking good.
Yeah. All right. Oh, he's gone back. He's taken us back into blue. He likes his 1 mana cards. Is that a popular thing in
It has
modern?
To be. Sort of under 3 is where you want to be at. Because if you can't interact with your opponent in the first sort of 2 or 3 turns of the game, you've lost.
You're screwed.
Yeah. Formats just get faster the older, the further back you go. The bigger the format, the faster it is.
Yeah. Well, he's won me over here because this is a Raymond Swanland card. He's one of my favorite artists, so he hasn't had anything too awesome yet. Oh, no, he's done Eugene from the last set.
Yeah.
That was amazing as well, actually. Beautiful.
Yeah. But this is...
better than the promo version. I didn't like, promo again.
This is vintage Raymond Swanland, this one. Vapor Snag. An island. It's an instant. Return target creature to its owner's hand. Its controller loses 1 life. Ah, so this has got a bit of a snag to it that Retraction Helix doesn't have. Because I was thinking, return target creature to its owner's hand. We're doing what you said before, but it's going to cost us 1. So we really want that.
So this one's more tempo play on the other player, pretty much.
Yeah.
Play. So you want to just... This is a very good... So at the moment, our pack's looking like this is a deck here. So Pestermite, Vapor Snag, Lightning Bolt. This is one deck for sure. So this is like a blue-red tempo deck that would play Splinter Twin. So I'm going to guess this would be fine with Splinter Twin in it. Would be effects with lots of other small red-blue tempo style things. So I'm guessing that would be a deck in this format. You're probably going to have like a red-green aggressive deck in this format, and then probably some kind of combo
Fistress annular
deck.
Just going to hang out.
Exactly. Well, we'll see some more picks, but I'm loving the look of this blue-red
tempo
deck.
Yeah, this looks really
solid. Snag is a card I would play just because it's pretty.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very pretty.
I play that in modern as well. So one copy of Vapor Snag.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rob, this pack mostly seems just
this
you all over.
Give me these cards.
That the logo there, isn't that a... Is that a
New Phyrexia?
It's the Phyrexia.
Yeah, it's really nice stuff. All right, there's a knight with an exploding head.
That sounds great.
Ooh, knight with a, what do you reckon it is here? Exploding a headed knight. That's red.
Is it red?
That's what he said. That's the tips.
Exploding knight head. Red card.
We got a set?
From M12.
I think we're done.
It's combust.
Oh, man.
Oh, I was thinking of a creature. Knight, you threw us off.
Yeah, I kept thinking of, like, Showstopper.
Yeah, all right, let's see like, it. Let's see
and
it.
There's actually, I think this is an artifact, something else. There's an elephant stamp on the on the horse's head that someone else has put there. It's not original.
This is a custom altar, we think. That's probably worth heaps more.
It makes me
now
feel like Aaron's probably soaked it in pure acid, you know, drug-wise, and you could cut out the corner of this combust card and probably have a bit of a... and lose the weekend.
I've seen a few in his file with little squares cut out of it. I mean,
that would explain a lot.
Yeah.
All right, so it's combust. One in a mountain. It's an instant. Combust can't be countered by spells or abilities. Combust deals 5 damage to target white or blue creature. The damage can't be prevented. Wow, it's like he hates himself for this one. This is a card that is stabbing at Aaron Graham's heart, basically.
Well, I mean, you've got to do that. If you're going to put in one deck that's a blue-white deck in the format, like, you've got to put in a guard way to beat it. That's the way this works. So I'm glad that he's done a balanced format here.
Well, I mean, we've not seen anything white yet.
We've seen...
Take 5 damage to kill a Pestermite.
That's true, but that's the use of this card. So in modern, Combust is an amazingly good removal spell against Splinter Twin. And also the combo decks that play Restoration Angel and Kiki Jiki, which is a similar
I thought
combo.
Splinter Twin was a red card.
It is, but what happens is you play Splinter Twin onto your Pestermite, and then as you play it on your Pestermite, in response, they can combust your Pestermite and kill it. So and then you can't... And usually the way that Splinter Twin prevents you from doing that is that they'll have a Spell Sky, which is a card that sits in play, artifact that costs 2 colorless mana. And its ability is you can pay 1 blue or 2 life, and you can redirect a target spell onto it. So the way it works is you
play
your Pestermite...
Spell or ability.
Spell or ability, exactly. So you play your Pestermite, they try and kill it, and then in response you go, no, I'm going to put that Lightning Bolt, whatever it is, onto my Spell Sky instead. The beauty of Combust gets around this because it only targets red and blue. Blue and white.
Yeah.
So if they go, oh look, I'm going to try and redirect my Spell Sky, you say, sorry mate, it has to be blue or white. You can't do that, so you lose your Splinter Twin anyway. So that's the beauty of this card, and that's why it's really.
And the can't be countered isn't shabby either.
Oh, of course. For the same reason,
the twin builds often have counter spells.
Absolutely, they're full of commands
the
and cryptic commands. Yeah. So you've got to be ready. Absolutely.
And for 2 costs.
That's a great card.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, another card that saw play in the original Modern Masters release. This is, of course, Aaron Graham's Modern Masters 2017 release. Kitchen Finks. One, and I never know how to say these, combine, you know, the 2 color things.
Mm.
Forest Plains.
I like
one,
that, FP.
Forest Plains.
That's good.
I don't know. it's a creature. It's a oof, if you haven't noticed before. I don't know what it is. O-U-P-H-E, an oof, oof, oof.
Really?
Right. Oof.
It's a Kitchen Fink. When Kitchen Finks comes into play, you gain 2 life. And it's got that persist mechanic that you were talking about before. When this creature is put into a graveyard from play, if it had no -1/-1 counters on it, return it to play under its owner's control with a -1/-1 counter on it, so you can do it once. All right. And it's a 3-2. So it's a 3-2 creature for essentially 3 mana. Gives you 2 life, can survive, but undeady.
Mm.
Kitchen Finks, how do you feel about that one?
Fantastic. What a guy.
Hate this card, man. Every time, whenever I see anyone play Kitchen Finks, I immediately think Birthing Pod. And just thank God that card's banned because, man, I hated Birthing Pod.
To bring
Pod
back
so
nightmares.
Oh, it's the worst. I mean, turn 1, like Birds of Paradise, turn 2, Birthing Pod, that's it. Game over. I mean, you're done. So as soon as I see Finks getting played, you go, this guy's on Birthing Pod.
I've already lost.
I've got to stop them getting pod. So that's what we think. As soon as you see Finks, you're going, oh man, no pods can resolve this game. So right. I'm really glad that it's cut out. The beauty of this card, though, as well, now we've seen a pack with Viscera Seer and Kitchen Finks in it.
Yes, there we go.
That combo we're talking about. So now we open this pack, we go, okay, this format is going to have the Malira combo in it. So Malira is a card that costs 2, just for a little green 2-2 guy. And his ability reads that your creatures can't have poison counters or -1 counters put on them.
Okay.
So the way it works then is you have your Viscera Seer out, you sacrifice your Kitchen Finks, he comes back into play because he doesn't have a counter with Persist, and then normally you put the counter on him so he can't persist again, but Malira says, actually no, you don't put any counters on your guys, so you can doesn't it comes back with no counters and you can sacrifice it again infinitely. To
as many times
as
you like.
Yep. So now we see this is a combo-esque format. We've got a Viscera Seer, we've got a Kitchen Finks, there's going to be Malira somewhere, I think. We can see a Pestermite. We can see a Combust to answer Splinter Twin. So this is going to be a format with Splinter Twin
that
in as
no
well.
That no counters card solves the whole Viscera Seer problem and the persist. Yeah, absolutely, isn't
it's
it?
Good, yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Absolutely.
I think we should be mindful. We've done two uncommons and I've got an uncommon here. So we could be up to... There's still four cards left.
Some good stuff already, yeah.
There's four cards left. This is
can't
value.
Can't believe Wild Mercator is a common. It's crazy.
All right, so our final uncommon card is Wear and Tear from Dragon's Maze, I think it is.
I think so, on
the wear side, it's one in a mountain. So it's that split thing. What do they call them?
Fuse cards.
That's it. So where is one and a mountain, destroy target artifact, instant. And tear is a plains for an instant that destroys target enchantment. So fuse card. I'll try not to look at what's coming up next. All right, how do we feel about that?
Great. So good. It deals with so many things that are a massive problem for people in modern. We've not seen any artifacts or enchantments.
Two cards in one and the two cards are both cheap.
Yeah, they're both really cheap. It's really easy to cast both half of this if you need to.
What's the sideboard situation like in modern? Do you have a sideboard?
Modern format is
really tight.
Very important. So you have to have narrow answers to things. So Wear and Tear is a perfect example.
Yeah.
It's great because it destroys an artifact, which can prevent the amulet combo deck, and it can prevent things like Spell Sky. It's very important. Like Batterscale is very important cards in modern.
Hmm.
And the other side, Destroy Enchantment, is great as well because it picks up things like Splinter Twin Enchantments. So we're talking about all other forms of various enchantments throughout modern. It's just great. And especially now that we see the other pack has got those Pestermites and it's got these cards that represent combo, we know this is going to be good. We know it's either going to destroy an amulet that's going to untap someone's Growth Chamber that was in this pack, or it's going to destroy a Splinter Twin that someone tries to cast on their Pestermite that's in this pack. So you wouldn't want to first pick it, but you would hope, seeing what else is in this pack, you would hope to wield this kind of effect so you can have it in the board when you're playing someone that plays one of these two decks, basically.
Yeah. So you'd be main decking that one still, or do you?
You probably wouldn't main deck it. Depending
on
what you see. So at the moment, we've seen a bunch of these combo S decks: one that needs artifacts, one that needs enchantments. So maybe, depending what you saw in the next packs, if it looked like there was lots of other decks that were enchantment artifact decks, maybe.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you don't want to pick this first pick. You want to pick it up on the wheel, and you want to put it in the sideboard, basically.
Yeah. Because the sideboard idea came to me first when we were looking at Combust until you explained how it could be used because of the white and blue.
Exactly, and that's a commonly used sideboard card in modern for that reason, to be boarded in against Splinter Twins.
So. Yeah. All right, shall we see what the excitement's about?
Yeah.
It's a common.
Oh, he's gone back. The troll. All right, good man. Good
man. You got us.
All right.
Maybe he's going to reprint it at rare, though. They changed the rarities. So
how many cards?
Maybe Masters 2017 is going to be
2, 4, 6, 8, rare reprints. 10. 12. We've got 12 cards, 12, 13, 14, 15. It's a 15-card deck.
Solid.
Yeah. All right. So, ingeniously packed by Mr. Aaron Graham here. So, we go for the uncommons, then we go back to common. Right.
Good. I like it.
Yeah. We haven't got a rare out there.
Maybe it's a no-rare format.
It could be a no-rare format.
Power level low.
Yeah.
I really hope that I'm not sweating all over his Tarmogoyf at the back here. I'm not sweating
over
your
cards. I'm sure it's fine. He's got a bunch of them, right?
Tasker's better anyway.
Considering he's turned some of them into hard drugs, I don't think he might. All right, Delver of Secrets.
Oh, man.
It looks like it's a flip card because it's got a sun.
It certainly is.
Delver of Secrets. That's a one island cost. Is from Innistrad. Creature, human wizard for a 1/1. So it's a 1 for a 1/1 as we've got at the moment. Delver of Secrets. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. You may reveal that card. If an instant or sorcery card is revealed this way, transform Delver of Secrets. And it's got a 3/2 in the corner saying that, oh, God, Insectile Aberration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he goes nasty, doesn't he? So it turns into a 3/2 on the other side with flying as well. And there's no flip back condition either. So that's it.
Once he's flipped, you've got your 3/2 flyer on turn 2. You've just beaten them in the face with it.
And you just got to jag that by revealing an instant or sorcery card.
Yeah, which is incredibly easy to set up in most decks that would run Delver of Secrets.
What, by cheating?
Yeah, mostly.
So you just reveal a card, so you just flip it up and leave it on top of your library.
You don't even have to... If it doesn't meet the condition, you don't have to show it to anyone, you just draw it as normal. But if it's an instant or sorcery, you just reveal it, draw it, flip this guy and hit him in the face for three.
Oh, so that is the card that you're drawing. So
yes, it's the one you're drawing for the
if
turn.
If it's an instant or sorcery, go, it's an instant or a sorcery.
Yep, I'm going to hit you for three
now. Here comes Delver of Secrets.
Yeah. And the trick with it is, like Riley said, you don't have to show them. So if it's an instant or sorcery, you can show them, it flips it. If it's not, you don't have to show them. Right. But there's like a lot of corner cases where you might flip a mana leak or a counter spell that you don't want them to know you have. So you can flip it, see that it's instant of sorcery,
and go,
give the little
wait.
Game face like, oh, I didn't see an instant of sorcery, put it in your hand, they go to cast something, counter spell it straight away. So you can do that, not always good, but like there are always options with things where you don't have to reveal. So Delver, it's a card I'm torn on.
It's a Grimsy game technique.
That's it. I mean, you've got to have some little text like that in modern. But anyway, so Delver Secrets, torn on this card, great card. So just amazing, one of the best commons I'd say ever printed.
Yeah,
but I'm also torn, there's the other side of it, where you look at the art, and it's this guy, you know, he's a scientist, he's in there, he's trying to like, you know, he's one cost blue guy that's trying to work away as a little scientist, and then there's an accident at work, you know, bam, suddenly he's turned into this crazy
flying
insect.
Oh, you don't think he meant it?
The thing is, he can't get turned back, you know what I mean? He's gone in, he's been delving for some secrets, he's trying to help, you know, the Blue Guild out by learning some stuff.
So you don't like this card because you feel bad for the guy?
I mean,
it's Lovecraftian meets Hyde versus Jekyll and Hyde.
You know, you play it, you think this is great, but then you flip it, you go, okay, this guy's 3-2, but then he's turned into this crazy insect, and he was this amazing, like, respected researcher before. I mean, it's tragic.
And you spend the rest of your life just running into lamps and banging your head.
Been attracted to bright lights.
What a way to go, right? So... It's torn. Obviously, it's a good card.
Your kids are running after you with cans of Mortine
and
stuff.
Oh, man.
I don't like this card for entirely different reasons, and that's that it shows up in most decks that play blue.
It's
an incredibly good card because it's such good value, and it's really easy to flip it.
Yeah, I'm playing
but
it.
But I just hate seeing it
the theme
everywhere.
Awesome.
There's so many of them around. I just...
Previously, before the bannings of Treasure Cruise in Modern, this card was everyone's nightmare. So Blue-Red Delver was by miles the best deck. I mean, I played it, everyone played it, basically,
that
had the chance. Yeah. So it was amazing. It was just a deck where you could play Delver Secrets for one mana, you could play other early aggressive one mana cost spells, just lots of little early interactive spells, and then Treasure Cruise, which once you'd spent all your little one mana spells, you could delve them out of your graveyard, draw three cards,
fill your hand
cruise,
up again,
fill everything,
keep going,
play them all, draw another Treasure Cruise. It was insane, that deck. So, thankfully, they've banned it now, but Delver's still very good.
Banned treasure cruise.
Of course.
Yeah. All right. Okay, I'm looking at our rare now. So, and there's still another card. Maybe it's a foil.
Could be the basic land at the back, 15 cards.
Would you have done that?
You may have done.
Oh, no, it is a foil. There is a foil coming.
Right. Brilliant.
It could be a foil land, mind you.
Foil time ago, probably.
Siege Rhino. And a plains and a swamp and a forest for a rhino, who's a 4/5 from... that's a Tarkir card, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is.
It's just the bane of everyone that doesn't play green in every...
if you're not playing a Siege Rhino, you hate... Siege Rhino.
You never want. You mean they play a Siege Rhino, you think, oh, this is bad. They play the second Siege Rhino, the next turn, it's just over. In every format.
So he's essentially a four cost, or you've got to have three of the, you know, a plains, a swamp, and a
forest. That's not hard to achieve.
He's a 4/5, and he's got trample. When Siege Rhino enters the battlefield, each opponent loses three life, and you gain three life. Take that.
Yeah.
So he just arrives and he's already done three damage.
He's great. I mean, it's played everywhere in Modern. I'm playing a deck at the moment in Modern, like a bug control deck, so blue, black, green. It's just like a classic kind of
mid-range
deck. Saltai, of course. Well, now it's called Saltai instead of bug, but yes. Yeah. Saltai, and then it splashes white with a Hollowed Fountain in the main deck just to play three Siege Rhinos, just because...
And it's battlefield effects.
It's just the best card. It's
if you can play Siege Rhino.
You can play. I mean, it's so much better than everything else. You play it. It's effectively a Bloodbraid Elf, which was an old banned card where you play it, has Cascade. But this guy,
you always cascade into
Lightning Helix, which
Lightning Helix.
Does three damage to them. Yeah. You gain three life. You recover some of that life that you've lost on your fetch lands that you need to get the lands to play cards like this. It's always good.
And you've put them down three without even hitting them. It's fantastic.
Exactly. It's so good. I mean, this is one of the reasons that Birthing Pod was banned as well. So
yes.
The problem with Birthing Pod was, Birthing Pod is effectively the artifact. It costs 4 mana or 1 Phyrexian and 3 colorless mana. And you can tap it and sacrifice one of your creatures and then search your library for any other creature. And the problem is, as they start printing better and better cards, like this creature, the guys playing Birthing Pod could play this Kitchen Fix that's in our draft pack, the 3-2 Persist guy. They can sacrifice the Finks and go get this Siege Rhino straight away. Slam you for the Siege Rhino and you're in serious trouble.
And keep the Finks and then do it again next turn and get a second Siege Rhino.
It was absurd. So now they've had to ban Pod because of the
creatures just keep
like
getting
this.
Better and better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So is the end of the battlefield effect too expensive, you know, for any bouncing thing? It's not really worth it, is it?
You wouldn't want it. I mean, you want the 4 or 5 guy in play. So there's a lot of creatures that have bad stats and good end of the battlefield abilities. Examples like Snapcaster Mage. So it's a 2/1 body, which is not relevant, but its end of the battlefield ability of recasting a spell of your graveyard is very good.
Yeah.
So those are the guys that you really want to be bouncing and replaying if you can. Seedrony, because it's a 4/5 on the board, which is great, a trampling 4/5 that puts pressure on. You don't so much want to lose a turn of attacking to replay that, so...
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. So let's see what this the foil has given us is. It is a common... Oh, I didn't expect to see that.
Ooh, Siege Runner.
It is a common, and it is from Fate Reforged.
Ooh.
It is...
Is it Treasure Cruise?
It's a big body.
Oh, big body.
It's a Gurmag Angler?
Oh, no, it's the Gurmag Angler.
Oh, yes!
Called it. Well done.
6 and a swamp with a delve, so it's not always going to cost you 7. But he's a 5/5 body. He's a zombie fish. His only ability is the delve
yep.
mechanics. You can get him cheaper by exiling cards from your graveyard. Ooh, nice card.
So I've only got 3 of these in foil, so I'm going to have to chase him up after this.
Yeah,
but I think this card is amazing. I love Gurmag Angler. I've been playing a lot of it in Modern.
He's getting a lot of play.
He's not getting a lot of play. I'm mm-hmm. playing it in Modern.
He's getting some play, but I mean, any delve card that he's trying to big bum.
Well, Patrick Shaven played it.
He played
a deck at the Pro Tour, which was designed to abuse these style of cards. So both Gurmag Angler, which is your 7 cost guy, the 5/5 with delve, and also Tassiga, which is a 4/5 for 6 with delve.
Yeah.
And so the deck effectively tries to play as many early things that fill your graveyard straight away. So even going as deep as playing cards like Mishra's Bauble, which is a 0 cost
artifact
that you can just play on turn 1, you can tap it, sacrifice it, look at their
library,
depending if you want to know what card's coming up.
Yeah.
And then at the start of the next turn, you just draw a card to replace it. So it effectively just puts a card in your graveyard for free. It makes cards like Gurmag Angler, Tassiga 1 cheaper.
And how quickly can you play a...
Turn 2 is usually you can do it on turn 2.
Wow.
So you can play turn 1 fetch land. So that's going to give you 1 in your graveyard straight away because you can fetch the land into the graveyard.
Right, yeah.
So you use that to cast Thought Scour on yourself. So that's a blue, costs 1 blue, and you mill 2 cards or put 2 cards from the top of your library into your own graveyard.
Draw 2.
And that card into your graveyard and draw 1. So that then is you've got your fetch land in the graveyard, you've got your Thought Scour and your 2 additional cards. So that's 4 already.
Yeah.
Plus the land in play, so that's 5. So then you untap, you play another land. If it's a fetch land, you can sack it again and then just slam your Gurmag Angler on turn 2. You've got your 5/5 guy, which is big on the
base. Yeah, on turn 2 it is.
Yeah, and it's the reason it's so good in this format at the moment. Normally, like, it wouldn't be great, doesn't have that many abilities. But the reason it's so great is the card we just opened last, which is Siege Rhino. So if you look at these two cards, you've got your 5/5 Gurmag Angler, you've got your 4/5 Siege Rhino. And this Siege Rhino is everywhere in the format. And so same with Tassiga, also 4/5. And now when you look at the combat stats, 5/5 Gurmag Angler that you can play quickly onto the board, it suddenly looks a lot more appealing in this format. So
because you're not going to see Siege Rhino for a while.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
you've
even
got
if they play
turns.
It, you can slam your Gurmag Angler, block the Rhino. Like it stops all their aggression.
Yeah.
They can't block the Rhino. They can't block the Angler with their own Rhinos. It's just a really, really, really good card. It just trumps Siege Rhino, trumps Tassiga, which are considered two of the best creatures in Modern at the moment.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very good card. I love it.
Wow. Right. So what are we most excited about out of this then? What are you going for?
This is the picks here. We're looking at Pestermite, which we would... So you've got to think about our draft theory, not knowing the format here, but I'm thinking if we see Pestermite, that this is going to be a format with Splinter Twin. And you always want to have, if you can, have like an instant combo way to win in these kind of draft formats because they can be slow, grindy. If you pick Pestermite now, you can hope to wheel a Splinter Twin later. You can hold the Pestermite in hand throughout the game until you draw the twin and then just slam it and instantly win.
Yeah.
Great card. Like It's not as good as a card like Siege Rhino on its own, but very good if you can pick up the other half. And then the second pick, I would say, the first pick would be between Pestermite and Siege Rhino.
Yeah.
And Siege Rhino doesn't need anything else to set it up. You just play it on turn 4. It's amazing. I mean, it's good all the time.
So the Angler's only good if you can get cards to fill your graveyard.
And you need Angler,
fast.
Yeah, very contextual again. Like, you need to have cards that fill your graveyard. And we don't see anything in here that effectively fills our graveyard faster than just, like, a one card. Her spell.
Oh, I mean, Viscerous here can, but I mean, you're sacrificing your other creatures to
but
do
it's
that.
Still, but I mean, you're still getting one card in your graveyard per spell because you have to cast that creature spell, sacrifice it for one in the yard. So you need to play cards like Angler and cheaply, you need cards that'll put in basically more than one into your yard per spell or will be free to cast. So you can get a card for effectively no cards in the yard.
Sure.
Yeah, well, the burn spells seem really appealing.
The other deck. Searing Blaze, Lightning Bolt. So I forgot about Lightning Bolt, which is also a top-tier pick. So Lightning Bolt, always good again. Cost 1, it's amazing. But Yeah, it's tough.
Also comes down to like how you like to play as well. Because I don't think I'd like playing a Bernie sort of just you know deck like that. I like this idea about you know the Delver of Secrets and stuff. And even the sneaky way of getting Siege Rhino out there. And
so if we're breaking this pack down, we've got like this is probably one deck is probably going to be Delver of Secrets, Pestermite, Lightning Bolt, Vapor Snag, Retraction Helix. These probably all go in the same deck and Searing Blaze.
There we go. And Vapor Snag and Delver of Secrets. That's my deck. Exactly. Oh, so you're playing Blue-Red.
Yeah, so Blue-Red Tempo, one of my favorite builds in all formats, basically. So I play that in every format, effectively. But yeah, this is a great deck. So you play, for example, you play your turn one Delver of Secrets. They play a guy to block it. Then you Vapor Snag, get the guy back to the hand, attack with your Delver of Secrets. It's great. Then you go on your next turn, you play your Pestermite on their upkeep. Play it down, tap one of their lands with its ability, so they're suddenly only playing off two lands on turn three.
Yeah.
So they're miles behind on tempo, and then you can attack in with your Pestermite and your Delver for five the next turn. So it's just great. Like, I love that style of deck. Very good.
So in a constructed modern deck, you are playing play sets of cards?
It depends. So you play play sets, obviously, of all your main core cards.
Yeah.
But then modern's a format as well where there's a lot of value in playing cards, like one-off cards that are exceptionally good in some situations, but not great in others. So cards, for example, like Slaughter Pact in a black card, it's a card that's free, effectively. So you can play it immediately for free to kill a non-black creature, and then you can pay the three at your start of your next turn.
You must, or
you lose the game. And for those style effects, I'll be honest, there are so many times I see people lose the game that it's unbelievable. So cards like Pact of Negation and Slaughter Pact all have the effect that you can play them for free, but the caveat is you have to pay the mana on your untap step, or you lose the game. And very, very often people forget to put reminders on their dice. They'll untap, go to cast a spell, and then say, I forgot to pay for the pact, I lose. It happens all the time. Perfect example was Jeff Harris recently in the Legacy League. Got to see him do a great play where he had a Pact of Negation to counter Aaron Graham's spell. Then he untaps, looks like he's going to win the game, forgets to pay it, goes to play another spell. Everyone's heartbroken. So it does happen. So
Aaron
wasn't
heartbroken.
He wasn't. No, he was loving it. But I mean, that's a tip for everyone. Like, if you
Who
ever have any of those things...
Did Aaron call him on it?
Oh, we were all watching, and then everyone was watching, and then he sort of went... No one realized immediately, and he went to do it, and then Aaron was like, oh, wait, you didn't pay for the pact. You're out. So a tip to new players, or like any players ever, is always put a reminder, because even if you're the best player ever, if you're going to forget one in 100 times, it's too many times. So always put a reminder on it.
All right, that was a good Buster Booster. Thanks for setting that up, Aaron. We probably name-dropped you plenty in that.
Who made this booster?
It's a good booster.
Who put it together?
Could have been Anthony. Anybody.
Somebody.
Anthony.
Yeah. All right. We'll look forward to 2017 when that gets published.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Topic discussion. We're talking about modern, obviously. Previously, we talked about this on episode 24. So if you want to go back and check out some more modern talk, go back there. It was who was on that one? That was Aaron and
Kian was there.
Kian was there. Yeah, that would have been it. Yeah, Aaron and Kian. All right, so we're going to break out the top eight deck list from the recent Modern Pro Tour, the Fate Reforged tournament in Washington recently. We've got the top eight deck lists here that are all listed on the Magic on the Wizards site. But we thought it might be useful just to go through them and get you guys to reflect on what works about them and what doesn't. We can go deep on two of the other decks a bit later on that you may or may not be playing yourselves. So what do we got?
All right, so top eight. This is not going to be in the order of they were in, but just the top eight guys. So
yeah, sure.
Firstly, we had Seth Manfield playing Burn. So Burn, great deck to get into here as a new player. So effectively, the whole strategy is you just burn them as much as you can. So it plays, the essential cards are cards like Lightning Bolt, which we luckily had in our draft before. So it does three damage for one mana.
Goblin Guide,
exactly the most scary card to ever see played against you on turn one in Modern. So Goblin Guide
Boris
is
Boris Charm in there.
So this one here plays Boris Charm. So this is a multicolor one. So rather than just being pure red, he's actually playing red white.
So it's standard. The usually, not only use the word standard, but the usual way I think to play a burn deck in Modern, you'd usually just get red, pure red. Is it?
I mean, there's a few different versions. All the core cards are red. So like, if you're playing a burn deck, you're 90% red, and then you can splash a few cards. So this guy here is playing four Boris Charm, which is one white, one red, deal four damage in this deck, effectively.
Yeah.
Also has a sub mode where you can, instead of dealing the four damage, make all your creatures indestructible. So what that does is if somehow you've happened to have a draw that has lots of creatures, so you have your Monastery Swift Spear, which is a one-drop aggressive card, Goblin Guide, one-drop aggressive card, and they have a board wipe or they have some kind of effect to kill them all, you can go, well, instead of having this 4 damage to you, I'm going to decide to use it to save my guys. So
we've talked
utility.
About Goblin Guide a bit, but so maybe we should just give a bit of a and give guys a bit of an idea.
Okay.
What does Goblin Guide do?
Okay, so Goblin Guide is their turn one play. It's a 1 mana cost, 2/2 goblin. It has haste, and its downside is whenever it attacks, the defending player gets to reveal the top card of their library, and if it's a land, you get to put it into your hand. So the upside of this card is that it costs 1 mana. It attacks immediately for 2 on turn 1, so it's the fastest, most aggressive card in the format.
Yeah.
But the downside is it's going to feed your opponent more lands. Now, the key with this is that you think, oh, that's a terrible downside because they're going to be drawing cards, they're going to be getting more land drops, I'm going to be miles behind. But the reality is that when you're playing a 2-mana guy, a 2-power guy that's attacking immediately on turn 1, you never give them any time to use those extra cards.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The idea with Burn is you kill them and they've got like 5 cards in their hand still.
I've got all these 3 lands I've drawn off your Goblin Guy, and you go, well, that doesn't matter, mate. You're dead, basically. So,
yeah. Right.
It's very aggressive. And this is a great deck for new players as well. The version that was in the top 8 of the Pro Tour, unfortunately very expensive because he uses a lot of fetch lands to minimize his chance of flooding out.
Right.
But you can play a cheaper version playing just basic mountains, so you don't need to play the fetches. Slightly less efficient, but not too much less efficient and very, very good. And the reason it's good for a new player, besides the budget cost of the deck, is that it's in a deck where you don't really have to think about too much of what the other player's doing. So your strategy in every single game is you want to burn the guy to death as fast as possible.
I like that.
So you draw an opening hand and you go, look, is this going to kill the guy really fast? If it's not, ship it back. You know what's happening. So so it doesn't matter if you're like a new player, you don't really know the format very well. If you have a deck that's linear and that's aggressive and that does the same thing every
game...
You
do your own thing like that.
Exactly. You focus on your own game. You focus on learning how your cards work together. You focus on getting the most efficient use of your own cards. And you don't really have to worry too much about what the other players are doing. You just want to get in there, kill them as fast as possible. So it's great for a new player. Like, you can be effectively playing it well without knowing too much about the format.
Right,
the advantage of having the white is Core Firewalker in the mirror.
Core Firewalker is absolutely killer in the mirror.
So what's up?
This guy plays...
Next?
So he plays... Oh, we'll just mention that really quickly. So another main reason for white is that Seth, and obviously these guys knew that coming to this event that Burn was going to be very popular.
Big,
so Burn always is just a good deck. It's so fast. Anyone that's trying to play a slow, dirty deck is going to lose to it. So he thought, well, if I'm playing Burn, I think it's the best deck. Obviously other teams are going to be out there thinking, damn, Burn is going to be the best deck. Like, I've got to beat it. So he has these 3 copies of Core Firewalker, which is a guy that costs double white. So quite hard to play on the splash, but that's another reason he plays a lot of fetch lands. So he can make sure to hit his double white. And it has protection from red. It's a 2/2 guy, and it also has whenever any player casts a red spell, you get to gain a life. So not only when you're burning them do you gain life, but if you're in the mirror and they're burning you, you gain 1 life every time they cast a spell. So very hard to beat.
Yeah.
And it has protection from red, so they can't burn it to death.
Or
so it sits there forever, exactly.
Yeah.
Just a fantastic card in the mirror. So that's one of the reasons this list was more effective than the other lists, because this meta game was full of burn.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he was ready. So that's deck one. Deck two was Eric Froelich's Abzan deck. So now this Abzan is just like the boogeyman of the format, basically. So everyone basically knows that Abzan, much like in Standard, is just like the core best deck in the format. For just a mid-range deck. I mean, it doesn't try to do anything tricky. It just tries to disrupt the other player by playing discard spells on turn one. So it plays 3 copies of Inquisition of Kozilek, which costs 1 black and lets you discard a card that costs 3 or less from their hand. So you can just play it. Rather than trying to advance your board state, you're trying to play that, see what they have, try and evaluate what their next few turns are going to be, and strip their best card out of their hand.
So and in this format, the discarding of something 3 or less is actually...
It's very
it covers a lot of cards.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you miss things like Seed Rhino and Splinter Twin, but, I mean, it gets almost everything that's relevant.
You've got the follow-up Thoughtseize for those.
Exactly.
So.
And it doesn't cost you any life, which is the downside of Thoughtseize. So Thoughtseize is terrible against... Well, not terrible, but much worse against Burn.
But if you see a Seed Rhino or something big, you know what's coming. So you
know
what to
play around
for.
Play around. And that's the perfect thing of this format. So the idea is you want to gain early information about what their hand is using your discard spells. Then you want to take away their removal usually and then play one of your big creatures. So it plays 3 Noble Hierarchs on turn 1, which is basically your mana guy, into 4 Tarmogoyfs, which is just the best creature in Modern, effectively. So the idea is you play turn 1 discard.
And we've all got 4 Tarmogoyfs.
Of course.
It's about time we had...
It's
cheap these days. I mean, it's like 200 and something bucks now.
Yeah.
Bargain.
So you've got $800 sitting there on the table.
Exactly.
Just in 4 of the cards that you need for this deck.
Brilliant.
So it's good. Yeah, it's cheap. I mean, it's a budget format, right?
Yeah,
it's just... But, so that's the idea. So you play your turn 1 discard spell, and you get to have your discard spell, which is a sorcery in the graveyard, probably a land that you've used to play the discard spell, and then whatever type of card you've discarded from there. So if they've discarded a creature, then when you play your Tarmogoyf, it's immediately a 3/4 already on the second turn. So it doesn't die to Lightning Bolt, which is very important in this format.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's this deck. It basically has a lot of efficient creatures like Tarmogoyf. It has Siege Runner that we spoke about before, and Tassiga, which was the big breakout card from
the Banana
Forge.
King.
Exactly. So he's a bit of a Banana King. I'll be real, I did not even notice bananas until just then. So it's pretty impressive. It's a guy who loves whips and bananas, so it's his interests. Yeah. But also it's just a 4/5 delve
long
guy.
Long walks
so
on the beach.
If you don't want to be interrupted by dragons on those beaches, unfortunately, in Fate Reforged. But he's, 4/5 for effectively one mana, so 5 and 1 black with delve. So in modern, effectively, you're paying just 1 black most times for a 4/5 guy, and then, which is brilliant already, pay 1, 4/5. I mean, it's better than Tarmogoyf in that.
Much
if you
better.
Put it like that, I mean, there's a bit of setup required, but
Goyf's not getting much bigger than that anyway.
No, exactly. 4/5 is where it normally sits. I mean, if they have an artifact and you get lucky, 5/6, but yeah, usually 4/5.
Oh, a tribal.
Or trash. But so Tassica, the other thing is its special, its ability, which makes it fantastic in this deck, is that you can pay 2 and 2 green, well, blue or green, but in this deck, 2 and 2 green, and you get to put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard and then return any non-land card, and non-land is the important part, from your graveyard to your hand. So you effectively, late game, can play this guy, use his delve abilities to take all the bad cards out of your graveyard that you don't want to get back. Then you can pay 4, activate his ability, you get to mill 2 cards, and you get a free card back of their choice. So obviously you want to use your delve cards to get all the bad cards exiled out of your graveyard so that they have to give you back a good card, effectively. So very, very good. It's just a grindy deck that this card just gives you another way to slowly grind more advantage and just slowly get more ahead. So very, very good. And Abzan, obviously, just the deck to be beating in Modern.
Cool. All right, next deck. What's happening then?
So Antonio, he was the eventual winner. So Antonio Del Moral Leon. Very
That's not
name.
The name of the deck.
Yeah, no.
That's the name of the guy.
This is Blue-Red Splinter Twin, so this is
Why
my deck
Why is no
of
one
choice.
Coming up with imaginative names? Is that part of the parcel of winning?
I think they used to have pretty imaginative names,
yeah.
but they got too long and a bit ridiculous.
There was an issue with
they sort of standardized. Oh, lots of things were longer than
So this was the issue they had with naming. So back in the day, the convention used to be like you just name it sort of some weird name,
yeah.
And people wouldn't know what it was. So you have decks that are named like some weird name like Tin Fins or something, which is the name of a deck, and then people go,
"Where's that?
Where's
from?
The,
what does it mean?
Is there fins in it? I mean, what is it?" Whereas someone goes, "The deck
we'll play
name
against
is,
them and find out."
I know. But if someone goes, "Well, it's playing blue, red, Splinter Twin," you go, "Well, it's blue, it's red, it has Splinter Twin. I know what's going on."
I had to look up where Tin Fins came from.
Yeah, exactly. That's
like,
what I mean.
It
that's
was crazy.
Example. So it's not
but
like
you can't side. You've got your main deck. You can't side in before you play.
No. I don't
so
know.
What's
I don't
the
mean,
point of...
I don't, because you don't know the deck. I mean, it's afterwards. When you go to the event and someone goes, "Oh, what were they playing?" And you go, "Oh, blue, red, twin." Immediately they know. But if you go, "Oh, they were playing this deck called this," and they go, "What is it?" And you go, "I think it had these things in it and these things. I don't really know." It's, you know, it's confusing.
Yeah, it could be anything.
So if it's... Whereas you use... These are just straightforward names, like Abzan, mid-range. You know it's going to be
is
green,
a rule
white,
that you
black.
Can't do...
I don't think it's a rule, but the Wizards
so,
guys
but they'll, never, they'll rename it. Your deck to.
Oh,
so if
right.
you call
it
like
sense.
Dave's Wonderful Masterpiece on your deck name and you do well, like they're not going to be putting that up.
Wizards,
on the list.
Wizards
yeah.
blow.
You know, it's going to be changed to like. Yeah, it's going to be changed
change
to blue red.
Fucking name,
yeah.
Wizard.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be a great name for a deck. So anyway, sorry, deck 3.
Okay, so we'll cover this in a minute a bit closer, Splinter Twin, because yeah, that is my deck of choice. But
yeah.
Splinter Twin, just a straightforward control deck. So there's a lot of different types of decks in the format. So Abzan was a mid-range deck that we looked at. Burn is a super aggressive deck. And Splinter Twin here, it's actually a blue-red control deck that happens to win through comboing. So your aim is not to... There are combo decks in this format which try and combo off as fast as possible and just win through the combo. But Splinter Twin is not really one of those decks. You can try and aggressively cast a turn 3 Pestermite or Deceiver Exarch, which are your creatures that let them untap themselves, and then go for the turn 4 Splinter Twin and try and immediately win. But very risky in Modern. I mean, people know that's what you're going to be doing. They're going to be having answers for it. They're going to leave up mana knowing that you're going to try and do that. And if you go for it and it doesn't work, then you lose your Splinter Twin and you lose your creature and you're miles behind.
Yeah.
So usually you just want to play it as a blue-red control deck. You want to just slowly grind them down, control them with counter spells, use your lightning bolts to remove their creatures, use your cantrips with like sleight of hand and serum visions, which are just one blue cantrip, so that you dig through your deck, to eventually set up a turn where you can have your Pestermite to play at the end of their turn, tap down their land so they can't kill you, have a counter spell for protection, then untap and play your Splinter Twin to win. So it's really a control deck that just happens to have a combo finish rather than a combo deck.
All right, well, yep. We'll get back to that deck in a yep. minute, and we'll put, because that's the deck that you're playing.
Absolutely.
And we'll put a picture in the show notes. So, if you're listening to this and you
and the yeah, so the next deck is from Yelga Wigishma.
That's how you would say it.
Wigishma, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty spot on it. And so this is another Splinter Twin deck, and this is actually almost exactly the deck that I'm playing with one or two cards different. So Very good deck. The only difference between, well, not the only difference, but the major difference between this Splinter Twin deck and Antonio's, that one is the copy, the inclusion of two copies of Blood Moon in the main board. So wow. Blood Moon is just a very, very strong hosing card. It costs two colorless, one red, and all it says is non-basic lands, a mountain. So that guy over there that previously had, you know, a beautiful mana base of four dual lands with two of all of his colors suddenly has four mountains.
There's four mountains.
In a lot of you trying to cast a Siege Rhino, I mean, having four mountains, not very helpful. So Blood Moon, very good. Very, very good card. It's very, very good against those Abzan mid-range decks. You just have to be careful that when you're not playing it into open Abrupt Decay mana. So what usually will happen in those decks that it's good against, green-black decks especially, because they're very greedy on mana bases, play mostly non-basics,
yep.
is you play your Blood Moon, and then they will tap green and black in response, float the mana, let your Blood Moon resolve, and then they will use Abrupt Decay, which kills a permanent with three costs or less, and Abrupt Decay your Blood Moon. So it works for a second, but then they get to kill it with the floated mana, and then you lose the Blood Moon.
Abrupt Decay being uncounterable,
exactly,
of course.
Uncounterable, yeah. So you can't even protect it. So you've got to really be careful about how you play your Blood Moon. You've got to set it up by doing things like playing Pestermite or Deceiver Exarch to tap their mana first so they can't have an answer to your... So they can't have Abrupt Decay up, and then once you're free, then you can slam the Blood Moon to lock the game out. So it's a very, very interesting deck.
And that was called Blue-Red Twin.
Blue-Red Twin, yeah. So this is the deck
Squabbling
I've
Siblings.
Played. Yeah.
Because you got bruises, blood, the blue. Red is the blood, twin. They're fighting, siblings. Squabbling Siblings.
That's
Wizards,
certainly,
there you go, take
that's
that.
Certainly my experience with my sisters.
Yeah. Oh, you'd be Blue-Red Twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose. So,
right. If you're one of you is really angry and you're like choking the other one out, you're like the red blue twin. I like it.
All right, Justin Cohen's Amulet Bloom.
Let's move on.
Okay, so Amulet Bloom. Now, this is, if you're a combo player, this is where you want to be. So
oh, God.
I hate these style of decks, yeah. But they're good. And if you're the combo style player out there, like if you're someone like Tom Dowling or you're like Lyle, who always, every time they come
Lyle
to every event,
combos.
Are on weird combo decks, like this is what those guys want to play. So it's a deck effectively that uses one of the lands we spoke about before. So they're called Karoo lands. The way they work is they produce two mana, but they come into play tapped, and when they come into play, you have to bounce another land. So it uses that and a combo with a card called Amulet of Vigor, which is what we were saying was probably going to be in that draft format.
Yep.
It's a one-cost artifact, and its ability is whenever a permanent enters the battlefield tapped and under your control, untap it. So you basically play a lot of those Karoo lands, which come into play tapped, and you have to bounce another land, with Amulet of Vigor, and then you play large creatures. So the Amulet
Summer
of Vigor
blooms
lets you
play more lands.
Summer Blooms let you play more land, and also cards like Asura, Lost and Seeking, who's a creature that costs three. It's a 1/2, and you can play two extra lands every turn. So it uses effects like that. And if you have, say, this Asura card out, lets you play two extra lands a turn, I mean, you only need to have one of those Karoo lands, because you play it, comes into play untapped, you can tap it for mana, then you have to bounce it back to your hand, but you can use your additional plays, land plays from Asura or from Summer Bloom to play it again, tap it again, generate two more mana.
Yep.
So that way you can very quickly generate mana and play out something like Primeval Titan, which is just the big winning card in green. It costs two green, four colorless. It's a 6/6 trampler, which is already insane. And its ability is whenever it comes into play or it attacks, you get to search your library for any two lands and put them into play. So then you can search for tap lands that come into play tapped, trigger your amulet, come into play untapped. So, and then it plays lands like Boros Garrison.
Summit Growth Chamber.
Well, Boros Garrison and Slayer's Stronghold,
oh, yes.
Especially. So
yes.
Because it comes into play, you bring your Titan into play. Then you can search for Slayer's Stronghold, which you can give the guy immediately. You can tap it to with red, white, and it gives your creature +2/+0 vigilance and haste. So you put it into play, you can search two lands, you can find this land, you can tap this land, give it haste, attack immediately with your guy. You can then search for another land. And the other land you can search for is called Sunhome Fortress of the Legion.
Yep.
And that one there you can then tap with red, white, and two.
Give it double strike.
And it gives it double strike and plenty of turn. So you've got your 6/6 Primeval Titan, which then becomes an 8/6 with your Slayer's Stronghold that attacks immediately. You search up the Sunhome Fortress, give a double strike, immediately you're attacking for 16 on the turn you played it. Which
with
can
trample.
Be as, with trample, exactly,
and
which is enormous. Oh. So, and you've managed to get four additional land drops. So you've got two from playing it, then two from attacking it. So you're just, that's how the deck works. You're just miles ahead. The backup plan, so that's game one, is just play, or plan one, is play a huge Primeval Titan, kill them with it. Plan two, a little bit more tricky. I plays an enchantment called Hive Mind.
Oh, yeah.
And this is very interesting. Most people have probably not seen it unless they've seen this deck. So it costs one blue and
Commander.
Five colors. Yeah, well, some of us never play Commander. So I'm
Suckers.
Way behind. So Hive Mind, whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, each other player copies that spell. And each of these players may choose new targets for his copy. So sounds a bit interesting, but effectively what it means
interesting.
Is...
sounds like suicide.
Effectively what it means is like whenever I cast a spell, you get a copy. Whenever you cast a spell, I get a copy. So that seems very fair. You know, we're both copying each other's spells.
Yeah,
everyone
gets
double benefits.
It's easy, you know.
It's both two-sided. It's very good. The only problem is that there's other cards in the format, like pacts. So pacts are spells, like we mentioned before, that you can pay for zero immediately, but the cost is that later in the start of your next turn, you then have to pay for them. So it plays pacts like Slaughter Pact, which can destroy a creature, but then you have to pay one black and two colorless. It plays Pact of Negation, so it's a counter spell that costs zero, but on your next turn, you have to pay two blue, three colorless. And it plays Summoner's Pact, which is a green spell, which costs two green and two colorless on the next turn. And so the trick here is you play your Hive Mind, which makes them copy any of your spells. And then if they're, say, a blue deck, you would go, oh, I'll play my Summoner's Pact now, get to search for a creature. You can have a free copy of Summoner's Pact as well. Search for any creature you want. Go for it. And then, but at the start of your next turn, you're going to have to pay two green, two colorless, or you're going to lose the game. And suddenly, you know, they're playing blue-red Splinter Twin. So you go, here's your Summoner's Pact. I get a copy. You get a copy. Search for a guy. They search for whatever they want. They untap. You go, okay, so now you have to pay four for your Summoner's Pact, or you lose the game. And they go, well, I don't have any green lands, so I lose the game.
They can counter their copy of Summoner's Pact.
They can. They can counter their own copy of the pact.
Yeah. It's getting a bit tricky
at that
stage. So
you're winning the game by making them have to spend mana.
Yeah, that they don't have.
So you make them have to pay mana that they cannot pay.
This is very cheaty, this whole format.
It's an interesting deck.
It's great. It's really
good. So two plans. One, Primeval Titan, beat them to death with a huge double strike on Primeval Titan with haste. Very good. Plan two, combo them out using Hive Mind and any of your Pact of Negation.
Yeah.
And you can use the Pact of Negation to protect the Hive Mind. So you play the Hive Mind, and your Pact of Negation is a free cost, free spell, so you can even tap out. Then you can play the Pact of Negation to protect it, and then play another pact to make them lose the game. So,
Did Hive Mind see absolutely zero play in Standard? And
I can't imagine it would have done.
I don't recall it getting played in anything. Because, I mean, you don't have something to cheat, it's not good.
It's hard to get there.
Oh, six mana, yeah.
Yeah, it needs to have a combo. So that deck's great. I mean, I hate playing those kind of decks. Very hard to play. You need to really know what you're doing. You need to know which lands to search for on every land drop. This is not a beginner's deck.
You can't take your time with it either, because they're going to kill you quite fast if you let them.
And you have to know what you're playing around. You have to know what they're trying to do to beat you. It's a very hard deck to play. Very good, very hard to play. Not recommended for a beginner at all.
Yeah. Nice. It sounds terrifying.
Mm. The next one, Jacob Wilson with Abzan. Now, this is a really interesting deck, and this was actually a breakout deck of the Pro Tour. So Abzan, like we spoke about before, that Eric Froehlich played, is a sort of a cornerstone of the format. It's always been in either that form or in Jund, which is a very similar deck. But
and this is
Steve
named
Mono.
The same as the earlier deck, so it'll be exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. Abzan. So it's the same deck.
Exactly the same.
So, So this one here is a bit different. So Pod got banned, and a lot of people are upset. One of the people, Jacob Wilson, is one of the premier guys known to playing Pod. His whole team always plays Pod. It got banned. They were just like, what do we do now? There's no Pod. And then they thought, wait a second, when we played the Pod deck and we didn't draw the Pod, man, it was good already.
We just played
crushed
good creatures.
People.
Oh, okay.
So they thought, what can we do here? So we're going to cut the Pods. We can't play anymore. It's banned. What can we do to help us? And they thought, well, you know, a lot of our creatures here, they're all basically green, white, double-colored creatures. So instead of the Pod, this deck basically plays a card called Wiltleaf Liege. Now, this card spiked in price massively after the Pro Tour, not super affordable now.
Yeah.
But it's effectively a card that costs one and three Forest Plains, if that's how we're saying it, Dave. David, that's our double, so the double cost. So effectively it costs you one and three green, or one and three white, depending which you have, or any combination of
I know,
two.
See, as soon as you start explaining
you
just go down this horrible rabbit hole.
That's why, I mean, I like it. Yeah. I like it, the one Forest Plains. Seems
you're
going
to say it like that, otherwise,
I like it. So that's where
it's one and three forests and three
plains. Yeah, all plains,
or
all
green,
and converted
then a,
mana cost
plane,
is like,
and then a green,
man.
And then, oh, shit.
It's weird. Anyway, so its ability is that, so it costs the four. It's a 4/4, dude.
It's a 4 mana.
I believe hybrid mana is the correct
term. I think that's the term.
And so it gives all of your other green creatures, though, +1/+1, and all your white creatures, +1/+1. And the amazing thing in this deck is all your creatures basically happen to be green and white. So all your creatures get +2/+2. So the way it works is you basically want to do an opening hand where you play some kind of mana elf. So it plays eight copies of either of Mana Elves, which is Birds of Paradise. So
which is an elf.
Which is effective. So when I say elf, I just mean anything that costs one green makes
dork,
mana.
Anything.
So Birds of Paradise is one of them, and Noble Hierarch is another. Both just effectively one-drop mana
it's
guys.
An elf dressed up as a Bird of Paradise.
Exactly. I mean, that's what they should have
it's got
in
feathers.
The art, right? Yeah.
It's like the Brazilian elf. You know, it's
Brazilian elf.
Not the wax Brazilian. Yeah. No, it's Mardi Gras elf. That's what it is. You know, all the
Birds of Paradise
plumage.
Costume. Yeah, yeah.
Is that much better?
Ooh, Voice of Resurgence is in there.
So obviously, as you can see, green and white. So it happens to fit the theme of this deck. And he's insane against counterspells. But basically, the most aggressive start of this deck is they play a turn one Birds of Paradise. You go, okay, that doesn't look too scary. They untap with three mana, and then they play a Loxodon Smiter, which they've got three copies of, or a Kitchen Finks, but Loxodon Smiter is scary. This guy comes down, he's
can't
a 4-4, you can't counter him. And also, if someone would cause him to be discarded, instead of discarding him, you get to slam him into play for free. And maybe not that relevant in some formats, but in a format where Abzan and Liliana of the Veil, who makes you discard a card, are very common cards, this becomes amazing, because they go, turn three, play Liliana, make you discard a card. You go, cool, man, I'll discard this Loxodon Smiter. Actually, I put it into play for free, and now I get to untap and just kill your Liliana with the Smiter that you gave me for free.
One of my favourite magic moments is watching the player with Liliana's face when they know I have Loxodon Smiters in my deck, they make us both discard a card.
I've been on the other side of it as well. You have to basically like thought seize them first and see they don't have it, or like hope they don't have it.
It's worse when you thought sees them and that's all they have.
Yeah, then you have to take it. Yeah. Then you're in serious trouble. So it's interesting. Also with this deck, Wiltleaf Liege has that same effect. So you have three Wiltleaf Liege and three Loxodon Smiter. So you've got six copies of a card that makes Liliana, which is otherwise maybe the best planeswalk in Modern, become useless. I mean, you play it, they get free stuff. It's really bad for you. So this deck is designed to beat other Abzan. So it basically plays a lot of heavy aggressive creatures. It doesn't play things like Liliana of the Veil. It doesn't play as much removal spells. It just tries to get down an early elf, play some huge green and white creatures, then play the Wiltleaf Liege with double pumps all the guys, and then just speed you to death. And this deck, very, very good. It was a breakout of the Pro Tour. It didn't exist before that. And it's very, very popular now. And it's definitely one of the best decks in the format.
All right. What do we got? We got...
Li Shi Tan is the next one, just on burn, exactly the same as before. Lots of burn spells. This guy's not playing... he is actually playing white as well. So he's playing Boris Charm. Almost exactly the same deck as before.
Sort of
Qualify Workers in the board, the same.
Okay.
The next one, Jesse Hampton, another Abzan deck. So this is the Abzan mid-range deck, which plays the 4 Liliana of the Veil. Plays Tassigas, so this is the same as the Eric Froelich mid-rangey deck, so very different to the Jacob Wilson mid-range aggressive deck. And that's it. So that's our top eight.
And there seems to be like quite a few cards, especially lands are making an appearance.
Oh, the lands was a huge boon to Modern. So before the printing of the most recent fetch lands, you only had five of the fetches in Modern.
Yeah,
so
what that means, Zendikar fetch lands, not the Onslaught ones.
Exactly, only the Zendikars. So what that meant was that for sort of half the decks in the format, you could have great mana. And it really limited your deck construction because
this is the color choices that were in this.
Exactly. Like a lot of times before you had to play off color things, like you'd have to play a Misty Rainforest, which is a green blue search land in green decks, just because you didn't have any other way.
I was watching Misty Rainforest this afternoon, which was
good.
Oh yeah,
great performer.
I think that's what they named the card after.
Good website.
.com
was the inspiration for the card.
Actually. All right.
So yeah, they used to have to play off color fetches, really bad. You don't want that. So now you can play perfect mana, whatever colours you are, you've got a fetch land. It's great. So it evens up the format a lot.
And the Banana King's there.
Oh, Tastic is good. I mean, Khan's was obviously ridiculous for Modern with printings of cards like Treasure Cruise, cards like Dig Through Time. Obviously banned.
I know, it's amazing that it's banned already.
It just
changed it so much.
If you were the person playing it, every time you played a card or copied Treasure Cruise, you just thought, this is weight, I shouldn't be allowed to do this.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
And that's when you're playing it, so you know it needs to get banned.
Yeah, if you're playing a card and you feel bad playing it.
Yeah, you're like, this is terrible. Or you play Cruise and then you draw three cards and you draw another Cruise and you Cruise again, it's just broken. So Khan's was good and Fates has been amazing as well. Tassiga, arguably one of the best... new creatures in Modern. I mean, it's effectively a one mana 4/5 with a great ability. It's been a huge impact from Fate Reforged.
Yeah, and we talked about Tassiga the other day about being one of the stock market cards. You know, you get a
mulligan. I bought in a lot. This was my speculative card for this, and this one for Fate. So I bought like 20 foils and like maybe 40 non-foils. So
he's a rich man. Not at all.
Drinks are on Rob.
This was at the pre-release. I just looked at this card and I thought, in Modern, how can it not be good? I mean, it's effectively one mana 4/5. And it was only like $3 and the foil was only like $7. Yeah. I just thought, this has got to be
complete
worth
bargain.
More. So I think it's great. And I still think it's going to go up. I'm holding on to them now.
Yeah,
I still think it's
going
to be worth a lot more. So.
I think two of the top five cards to come out of that Pro Tour from Khan's Fate Reforged. Which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, our own personal players that went over and absolutely dominated on the Pro Tour are Paul Jackson and Anthony Lee, both very good, both had great records playing Abzan, and both played a lot of copies of Tassiga. I actually think it was four copies of Tassiga. In those guys' decks, which is most people playing two.
For a legendary creature, playing four of in a deck.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I think
it tells you how good
like
it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they made a great choice, and you could see it through the results. Those guys crushed through the Pro Tour field of like amazing players. I mean, they're obviously both very, very good players as
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, they did fantastic.
What other legends have shown up in four of in decks? Like Geist did, Geist of Syntrax.
Geist is one. I mean, there's not many, to be honest.
No, there aren't many legends you'd want to play as four.
But Tasica is so good. I mean, the downside when you talk about it is like, if you have it stuck in your hand, what that means is that you have an active Tasica in play. So, like, that's good. Yeah, that's not a bad situation.
Yeah.
So, it's not the worst. I really like that card. So.
All right, so Washington wrapped up, and then there was a Grand Prix in Vancouver not long after that. So everyone playing that obviously reacts with their decks to what's happened in Washington. Mm. So what was the main themes of what people
included? The following was Grand Prix Vancouver. So Grand Prix Vancouver was on the 22nd of Feb, following up from the Pro Tour. So this is when everyone's seen the list in the Pro
six
Tour
days
after
ago.
The bannings. Yeah, this is very recent. So and then they can adapt their decks, and you see decks either from the tour or decks that people have adjusted to beat decks that did well with tour.
Yeah.
So the top eight here, not changing too much. So I mean, the top eight winner of Pro Tour Fate Reforged, obviously Blue Red Twin, and then again has followed up with Blue Red Twin here, has taken out the top spot in Vancouver. Very similar build again to the winner of Fate Reforged. So this deck obviously very strong, very scary deck, and potentially too good, but we'll see.
Mm.
That's number one. So number two deck, Affinity. Now Affinity,
that sounds different.
Affinity.
So Affinity, I don't know if you've seen this deck before. It's like an artifact aggressive deck that plays lots of little artifacts. So the whole idea of this deck
is zero cost artifacts.
Yeah,
it plays like zero cost artifacts, and then things like Arcbound Ravager and Cranial Plating. So Arcbound Ravager is one of the core cards. It's a two mana cost artifact, and its ability is that you can sacrifice another artifact and put a plus on plus counter on it, and then whenever it dies, it has an ability called Modular, so you can put the counters somewhere else. So effectively, the way it works is you use lots of different little attackers, you send them all across the board, and then when they don't block one of them, you sacrifice all your other things, sacrifice the Ravager, and make that guy huge, and then kill them with the attacker that gets through. So there's that, and then the other core card is called Cranial Plating, and it's another just two-cost artifact.
Equipment.
Seems pretty simple. It's an equipment. Yep. I mean, the thing is, you get plus one, plus zero for each artifact you control, which seems fair when people have a couple of artifacts, you know.
Yeah,
but when you have
if your entire board is artifacts,
all of your artifacts and your lands are artifacts,
and on turn one you've emptied your entire hand onto the battlefield,
it's another card
artifacts.
Which is going to be useless in drafting and standard.
Oh, it would be dreadful.
Oh, in this you just play your free artifact, your Ornithopter, your 0/2 flyer for free on turn one.
Yeah,
you know, and then you follow it up with getting a Cranial Plating off a few little mana things. Then you're suddenly attacking with a huge Ornithopter. It's insane. So this deck very good, but again, it's a deck that really, really benefits from knowing the deck. It's very hard to play. There's a lot of synergy in the deck. There's a lot of interactions that are complicated in the deck. So it's not, again, it's an aggressive deck, but very much not a beginner's
deck. Knowing the hands
deck,
to keep is the tricky bit with that deck.
Yeah, and knowing how to properly sequence every hand is hard. Knowing how to sequence the deck against disruption, because artifacts is rough, because it's a great deck, very, very
there's
good
game
one.
There's a lot of hate against it.
Exactly. It has a very, very good game one matchup against almost every deck, but game two, everyone has huge hoses coming out of the board to beat Affinity. So very good deck, very hard to play, though, very synergistic.
All right.
Next one down. Oh, sorry?
I was going to say, so what other...
Our next one was just Bloom Titan again. So this deck, which was appeared in the top eight, was actually an amazing story with the top eight. So, again, not too much of a tangent. We are talking about this deck. But at Pro Tour Fate Reforged, Bloom Titan deck was basically... It had been played, but not really heard of as a competitive deck. And then coming into the round to play for the top eight, so they make top eight of the Pro Tour, the two guys... Oh, just before the final round, sorry. The two guys playing this deck who are housemates... So Justin Cohen, who ended up in the top eight, and Sam Black, who is a well-known pro, both playing the deck. They were playing against each other. They knew whoever won that match would be straight through to the top eight of the Pro Tour. The other one would not make it. They would be eliminated. So they played two matches. They went one each. Then they talked to each other and they said, look, you know, we can draw here, meaning that neither of us is guaranteed top eight, but both of us have to play next round. So this means that one of our two friends are not guaranteed to get in.
Yeah.
But if we both win, both of us can make it. So we could live the dream, not knock each other out, take a draw, which is like pretty risky
big
because if they played
the
out, I mean, they're 1-1, so they both have a chance to win. If they play out, one of them's locked into top eight at the Pro Tour. So and they decided to draw and then play in the last round. And unfortunately, Sam Black didn't make his win, but Justin did. So it was the right choice by them. One of them got in anyway, which would have been the same effect if they played.
Justin had been playing that deck for a really long time. I think Sam Black had only...
He had just picked it
just
up off
picked
Justin.
It, up.
It was his deck. So Sam Black convinced him. I mean, he convinced Sam that it was the best deck, and they both played it. So it was amazing to see like two friends play an unknown deck, basically. Well, very little known deck. Mm. Bring it in, and then make the hard call to not knock out any of their friends, both to jam in the last round and battle for top eight. It was a great story. And yeah, Justin made it top eight. Great to see. And unfortunately, Sam didn't get the cut. But yeah, it was a beautiful story.
But obviously, that deck's been played and got to the final eight despite it not making that appearance in the.
So one of them did make the appearance. So one of them did. So they were both playing the same deck.
He came second in the
So those guys, Sam and Justin playing against each other, were both on the same deck. And one of them made it to top eight. So this deck again sees another appearance. Coming third again in GP Vancouver. It's just a very good deck. If you don't have interaction, it can just kill you immediately. We spoke about it before. Very good. Fourth, again, Junk is just Abzan midrange. So, again, this is just the standard deck we looked at before. Just Boogeyman of the format. Hard to beat. Liliana's Tarmogoyf's Lingering Souls. Just good.
Battle Skull,
also good out of the board. Yep. Number five, Aura Hexproof.
I can't believe this.
I love this deck.
This is a deck where I was just about to say people are so torn. And Riley showed me exactly. He loves it. I absolutely hate this deck. It always gives me... it's a very, very good deck. I don't mean it's a bad deck. Very good deck. Very competitive. It's a good deck. I hate it because it gives me ringbacks of... or flashbacks to Innistrad Standard. Where
ban Hexproof.
Geist of St. Troft. Hexproof was the deck. Ban Hexproof. And that deck, it was absolutely no interaction.
Coincidentally, that's what I played back then.
I absolutely hated that deck. So this deck's very good. The strategy of this deck is that you play creatures that have Hexproof. So the perfect creature is Slippery Bogle. It just costs one green... You slam it down, or blue, but in this deck it's green-white, so effectively one green. You slam it down, has hexproof, and then all you do is load it up with massive enchantments. So they can't interact, you've got the guy, if they try and kill it, you have multiple types of enchantments. So one type that's essential is these Umbras. So Umbras are just an enchantment that effectively costs one, give a minor effect like Spider Umbra, so it's 1/1, gives it +1/+1, and reach. But its effective ability is Totem Armor, so if your creature would die, so if they somehow manage to kill your hexproof creature... Instead of killing it, you just sacrifice the Spider Umbra, so it gives it like an extra life. So you keep your guy alive, and then that's one type, the Umbras, and the second one are the damage ones. So it plays Ethereal Armor, which is one of the main cards, which gives it +1/+1 for every other enchantment you have. So if you have two or three enchantments, play an Ethereal Armor, suddenly you guys are enormous. And then if you play a second Ethereal Armor as well, it's just... You just can't
it's
come back.
It's so hard to deal with, and... If you can't get creatures out fast enough to keep blocking, you're going to die in a few turns.
Oh, absolutely. And they just race so fast. So that's the card that puts all the pressure on. And the card that stops you ever being able to win effectively is Daybreak Coronet. So this is a card, another key card in the deck. Costs $40, so it's like the money card in the deck. But it costs 2 white. You can only put it on a creature with another enchantment. So that's the drawback. You can't just play a guy and slam this on it. It needs to have another enchantment on it or it fails. But he gets +3/+3, he gets First Strike, gets Vigilance, and Lifelink. And Lifelink is the big problem. So this is a deck where you can sort of maybe try and race them if you can chump block their big guys and then attack over the top. But if they're suddenly attacking you with like a 12-power guy with Lifelink, you can never race them. It's hard to remove the guy. It's just a very, very strong deck.
Twin and Infector, they're it, really.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, it's a brutal deck. I mean, it's soft to sacrifice effects like Liliana, but then you can always play, just make sure you're playing multiple creatures out. I mean, you play 14 creatures in the deck, so just make sure you're having like a second Bogle with no enchantments that just sits there, and effectively his entire job is just to be sacrificed to Liliana. So that's how you play that deck. It's very, very good, very fast. It has no interaction with the opponent. It's another deck where it's very good for a new player. I think one of our friends, Justin, who was on the XCOM, is actually just building this deck now. So we're just going to put it together for him. And he's going to start to jam it at some of these events. So people are
Yeah, he said he was going to be playing Modern soon, yeah.
Yeah, but
pull out those Chainer's Edicts.
It's just good, man. I mean, it's just a good deck. Like, you don't, again, like Burn, you don't need to worry about your opponent. Your plan every single game is to play a Hexproof guy.
You play a guy, suit him up, attack it. That's all you want to do. Yeah.
So again, great beginner deck. Don't need to know anything about the other people's decks, really. Just jam it on, know to play around sacrifice effects, and just kill them. I mean, it's good. If you're a new player, great, get into it.
Brilliant.
Although don't play it, actually, because I hate it. So don't play it.
Perfect. You did mention the Infect decks.
Yep, so as we go down, so sixth with another Bloom Titan deck, as we discussed again. So it's put two copies again into the top eight of this Grand Prix Vancouver after putting one in the top eight and narrowly missing a second one in Washington. So this deck, obviously good. It's going to stay around the metagame. You've got to be ready to beat it. You've got to know how it plays when you're playing against it. So very important to learn that deck if you're a reasonable modern player. Number seven, Infect. So this was another huge breakout deck of the Pro Tour. It was a very weird deck at the Pro Tour in the sense that if you look at the statistics, it had the highest win percentage of any deck. So like it won the most out of any deck, but none of the players happened to just streak in enough
game.
Wins. Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you look at all the decks in the format, this was the best performing deck at the Pro Tour. Won the most games, but unfortunately didn't manage to put any of the players into top eight. If you've seen Infect in Legacy, it runs a similar idea. So all it is plays just a small Infect creature on turn one or two, just gets it down and then just immediately buffs it with huge things like Become Immense, which gives it +6/+6. And with Infect, so the trick with Infect, if people aren't aware, is that if your creatures have Infect, instead of dealing 20 damage to them, you just need to deal 10. For each damage you deal, they get an Infect counter or a Poison counter, and once they reach 10, they're dead. And you can't heal from poison, so if you've done 9 damage to them and they've got effects to gain 20 life, it's totally irrelevant. You can just swing through for the last poison and they're dead. So you can't beat them with lifelink, with lifelink effects. It just races you fast. And they use elements of the deck that let them see what you're doing. So Gitaxian Probe, they look at your hand. They have stuff like Vines of Vastwood, which give their guys hexproof. So if you try and kill them, they just go, no dice, mate. Got the vines, you can't kill my guy, and I'm going to buff at 6/6, you're dead. So
yeah, and all
brutal.
These things fill up the graveyard for the Become Immense, which has Delph.
Exactly, so. You just throw it. That's another card that's broken out of the recent set, so Become Immense gives you a guy +6/+6 with Delph and a green, so you're effectively playing one green, +6/+6, and when you're thinking that 10 points of damage kills someone, 6 points of damage off one card for one green mana, very effective. So that deck's good, hard to play around, it's good. And the final deck was just another Abzan junk deck, so not exciting, just Abzan mid-range.
Couldn't play it.
All right, well, how about we do a quick blob, and we'll come back and we'll just go through each of your own decks here and have a chat about those, eh?
Sweet.
All right. Riley, what have you got over there?
We happen to have the best and worst performing deck from GP Washington. I am playing
the worst
Tron, which came last of all of the decks at GP Washington. It works basically by assembling three lands, and it's very consistent in doing that. So these three lands, once you've got them in play, give you access to 7 mana on turn 3, with which you really just want to play Khan and start exiling all of your opponent's stuff. It's pretty straightforward.
So is the Tron like Voltron?
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
Like you're building a
little individual member. You gather all three together and bam.
Yeah, you get these three lands together and you've got lots of things to find that. Like you've got 4 expedition maps, which are artifacts you can sacrifice to go get lands. Sylvan Scrying, so sorcery, you can do the same. And really, that's enough to cover you for it.
Yeah.
The entire deck is colourless.
And we'll put the picture of the deck on show notes as well, so you can have a look at what Riley's playing.
So I've not updated it for a while.
Bullshit.
But we've got two. I got two Ugins in there because I figure this is where Ugin belongs. Really,
not updated
completely
it for a while,
colorless
you mean
deck.
Like a
I mean,
few
like
hours.
3 weeks.
Well,
ago.
The most recent set. I mean, only updated when the most recent cards come out. Like, I haven't updated it with any
of
the other
with
ones.
Two of them. And that's
haven't
it.
Put any
There's
spoilers
nothing
from
else
Dragons
in
here yet. So
get out. They start on Monday, don't they?
Yeah, man, Monday.
So we got 2 Ugins, 4 Khan. So that's the Planeswalkers covered, and they'll take over
so
the game.
So what's the deal
themselves.
With Khan? Because this card is a
with Khan?
Nightmare.
What do you mean, what's the deal with Khan?
Explain
this guy is
good.
So good. So he's 7 mana, so I play him on turn 3.
Yeah.
He comes in with 6 loyalty, which is a lot for a Planeswalker. And
It's the worst Jason Chan art I've ever seen.
What are you
He's
talking?
Usually all right.
This guy's beautiful. Khan is
it's Khan.
Stunning.
It's Khan. You can't not like
this card
Khan.
Is stunning.
Look at that guy. He's imposing. I mean, he's a figure of leadership.
Yeah.
Like, he's leading your Tron deck to victory. Man.
Jason Chan painted Vampire Nighthawk.
You know
how
what?
Can he be proud of this
you
picture?
You know what Khan has gone through to get to this stage?
Is
this
no
guy
respect.
Has
no
gone
respect,
through
Dave.
A lot.
No respect.
Is it? Okay. He's made out of concrete.
Yeah, but just, he's been weathered, you know what I mean? It used to be, you know, covered in, like, rock formations, and he's been weathered through
I think it's really appropriate that you play him
like
off of Urza lands. I think it just makes complete sense to
all right,
play
I'm distracting you
lands.
From the good stuff. All right.
Anyway, so he comes in
next,
with 6 loyalty.
Next month we'll talk art with Madison.
You plus 4 him, and target player exiles something from his or her hand. And that exiled card goes under the card. They get to pick it. That's not a big deal because
it is a big deal. We just learned that could be a bad deal.
There's no way that they're killing your planeswalker.
Oh, so they don't
no,
have to
it's,
discard
it's exile.
Exile. So you
exile,
don't get your
not discarded.
Not
yeah.
Discarded.
So none of their madness costs.
So just exiles is just gone. Right.
Yeah. -3 is exile target permanent, which really upsets anyone playing Scapeshift because there goes their Valakut.
And he comes in with 6 loyalty, and it's
6.
A +4. So you're only 2
so
away
up to
from ultimating him.
And the ultimate is awesome. You restart the game completely, leaving in exile all non-aura permanent cards exiled with Khan, and then you put those onto the battlefield under your control when the next game starts. And
so you make a pile of their cards, restart the game, and then just use
and
them.
Then you
or
start
your
with
own
them.
Cards.
Oh,
so you can exile
sometimes.
From target player. So you can exile, like, if you have another Khan in your hand, you can exile, like, your own Khan.
So
then you can reset the game with your Khan and then with nothing. Yeah. So you can see how that goes for them.
Obviously. So, like, if you've got...
Oh, because they're under the, on the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, yeah. So the guy's got an ensnaring bridge in modern. Mm. Yeah, so they've got an ensnaring bridge out in Europe. You're sat there with your Emrakul on the battlefield looking like an idiot. You can, you know,
so
restart the game.
So doesn't let you attack, basically. Like, it's...
Yeah.
They can only, you can only attack if you've got... They have the same number of cards in their hand as your power. Grid.
Yeah.
So
right.
You basically can't attack if you have a huge guy. So this card, Khan Liberated, is the bane of the format. When someone sits down against you and they go, turn one,
Urza land.
Yep. All you're thinking is, please don't play two more Urza lands and then a Khan. That's seriously, as soon as they play,
let me find a counter spell before then.
Yeah, do not have turn three perfect into Khan.
Yeah.
You lose.
It's so satisfying when it happens.
This guy, basically, you can imagine how it comes down. He goes, play a Tron land, seven mana. Play a turn three Khan, and then he uses the exile ability on your land, and then
suddenly
he's making
you're down
seven
to
mana,
one
and you're
land
on two mana,
yeah,
and you're just miles wide. Again, you can never come back. You're
you can't
it off,
catch up.
Yeah. It's just it buries you. So this card very good. It's the reason to play the deck, basically.
So I mentioned Emrakul. He's the main guy, the big Eldrazi guy. 15/15.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Can't be countered when you cast him. Take an extra turn, which is a big advantage of just casting him outright instead of just cheating him into play.
Cheating with play through using Khan, like exiling him and bringing him back for
beginning
of the next game.
You wouldn't
game
get
for
an
free.
Extra turn in that case, but
right.
And there are lots of other things, like you can just sneak him into play.
Yeah.
And he's got Annihilator 6. So when you attack with him, the defending player sacrifices 6 permanents before they get to decide how they block, which is just crazy and enough to end most games. Then there's Sundering Titan, which is also it also makes people really upset. When it enters or leaves the battlefield, you get to pick a land of each basic type and destroy them. So you can wipe out someone's mana base completely very easily. Then there's Wormcoil Engine, fantastic artifact, 6/6 Death Touch Lifelink. When it dies, it leaves behind 2 tokens, both 3/3s. One has Death Touch, one has Lifelink.
Beautiful Remnant and Artistry as well, I believe.
I also run one Mindslaver in my Tron deck with one Academy Ruins and an Island just to activate it. It's really fun, Mindslaver locking someone, and Mindslaver can make a big difference even if you don't just have someone Mindslaver locks and just cast it every turn.
So what is Mindslaver?
Mindslaver, for 4 mana, you sacrifice it, and you control target player during their next turn. So you can see everything they can see. So you can rifle through their sideboard,
go through their
pockets, move their lands around. Yeah,
change the parting in their hair.
Yeah, you can do whatever you like.
I mean, you can do it. That's part of the thing. Going through. So with that though, a bit of a joke, but going through the sideboard very important. So if you're a player that's playing Tron, you play Mindslaver. What you want to do as soon as you take control of the thing, go. Can I just have a look at your deck?
Take control of their turn. If any information you can get is really helpful.
Yeah,
so
you want to see what they're
going to
board against you. Yeah.
And then you know what is important, what isn't when you're sideboarding.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. There's an Eye of Ugin, which I'm not sure how Ugin Planeswalker feels about playing with. I don't know.
What's the usual win with this? How do you usually win? What are you aiming for?
Is you want to keep them controlled with Khan, and either they'll scoop or they won't. If they don't scoop, eventually you'll get to Emrakul, and it doesn't take very long to get to 15 mana when you start with 7.
Or you can just rain Wormcoils on them, which is a 6 mana, 6/6, like Death Touch, Lifelink
guy.
Most
decks can't.
Yeah,
so
if you've got 4 copies of it, you can just slam them one after the other, and you've got effects like Ancient Stirrings that let you look for colorless cards. So you can dig through your deck, find a lot of worm copies of Wormcoil, just continually slam them on the board. If they kill them, you get your tokens back, and you just keep killing them. I mean, it's very hard to beat.
Board wipes to keep their stuff out of the way. So if you're not exiling it with Khan, you can exile everything with Ugin, except your stuff, which is all colorless. Or there's Oblivion Stones and All This Dust. All This Dust is fantastic, because it gets around the Hexproof deck.
All This Dust is what?
Each player sacrifices all colored permanents he or she controls, which sounds a bit racist, but it is not.
if we want racist cards, they've got them. You know, the KKK card?
It's
Aaron. Aaron
that card's really good. Induced Prejudice, isn't it? That's a really good card.
Very, very dodgy. We're not making...
What it does is...
Yeah, we're not promoting... Yeah, in the game, it's fantastic.
Of course, yeah.
Anyway, so All This Dust is great, because it just sacrifices things so... Anything indestructible, hexproof that you haven't found a way to deal with, doesn't matter, it's gone. That's basically what we do. We make lots of mana, play big things before the other guy can do anything about it.
Great. So if you want to see that, look at the show notes at 7landhand.com. You can have a look at what Riley's playing. Rob, what's going on
over there? So mine is the other end of the spectrum, basically. Riley's is like all mana, play huge dudes, slam them in, just kill them. So mine is blue-red Splinter Twin. So this deck, though, it's effectively just like we said, we talked about it a bit already. It's a blue-red combo deck, blue-red control deck with a combo finish. Plays a lot of early interaction, things like Lightning Bolt, so one red, three damage. So when they play things like a turn one, Birds of Paradise, or they play small dudes on like their first two turns, you just clean them up with Lightning Bolt. It also plays Spell Snare, so just a one blue that target counters any cost, the card that costs two. So in Modern, we're talking Tarmogoyfs, anything that's big, Dark Confidant, not played as much now, but still very good. Remands, Mana Leaks, very good in the control mirror. So just early interruption. And then it plays a lot of cantrips. So four Serum Visions, which is just a one blue thing, lets you draw a card and scry two. So you play that, you're digging in for your Splinter Twins, you're digging for your Pestermites, and you're digging for your counter spells. So it plays four Serum Visions, two Sleight of Hand, just another digging spell. And then it plays a bunch of counters. So two Mana Leaks, which just stops them from playing anything. So Mana Leak is one blue, one colorless, counters a spell unless they play three. And also three Remand and three Cryptic Command. So just the classic counter spell package. And it's, yeah, like I said, effectively you're just trying to counter everything they do, kill their guys with bolts and electrolyze, and then just slam a Splinter Twin to win. And also just two Blood Moon main, which is a big thing about this deck. So Blood Moon is just going to kill anyone that's playing random land. So anyone playing that Amulet Bloom deck we talked about before with Primeval Titan, you play Blood Moon, they have to concede immediately. So they have no way to stop it from getting played except for their Pact of Negation. As soon as you play it, they have no lands, they're out. So it's a good way to hoses that deck, which is very popular. It's just a very, very good deck. So this is what I play. There's also another version I play with black, so blue, red, black, which is has Tassiga in it, which is more of a tempo deck. So that one cuts copies of Splinter Twins, so rather than playing the full package of four, it just cuts down to either three or two Splinter Twins, and it plays four Tassiga, or three Tassiga in the main, or well, two to three, basically. Just gives you more of a tempo. Plays things like Vendilion Click, so 3-1 flyers. And that game plan is really just to kill you with tempo, so counter your things, beat you to death with little flyers, and then maybe sometimes have the Splinter Twin. And it's the perfect example of you scare them with Splinter Twin. So you play your Deceiver Exarch or your Pestermite, and they're going, oh my god, this guy's got Splinter Twin. They have to be careful, they have to play around it, they can't tap out. But you only have two copies in your whole deck. So really, they're playing
around a card that you're
they're
not
scared,
really playing.
And you're just playing all your tempo cards, doing damage, getting in with your Pestermites and Vendilion Clicks. And then eventually, if you draw the Splint, you can try and slam it and win. But you don't have to. So that's a really good deck as well.
I've enjoyed those sort of decks. Not in Modern. I haven't played Modern. But those decks that just have those cheeky little two power, one power flyers that, you know, sort of just keep going in there.
Yeah,
keep
they're not important enough for a removal spell.
Exactly,
but also you have to deal with them.
Yeah, because after four or five rounds, you've just lost,
you've lost 10 life.
Important flick in that as well. So you're playing tempo and not combo as much. So in this version, you play two copies of Pestermite, which is your 2-1 aggressive guy with the combos out, and four copies of Deceiver Exarch, which is your 1-4 guy. They both cost three, and they both combo better. So in the combo one, you play all the Deceiver Exarchs because it doesn't die to Lightning Bolt, like 1-4. You play it, you try and twin. They can't kill it with Bolt. They need like a Path to Exile, a Dismember, those style effects, or a Combust. But the tempo version, you play all four Pestermites and only one or two of the Deceivers. You just want to go full aggressive. You want to beat them to death with 2-1 flyers and
keep
just
them
kill them as far as you can.
Stop them from doing stuff on time.
So that's what I play. They're great decks. Two very different styles. Both very good.
Right, I like about Twins. You don't have to combo with it. Like, I've seen a few times where Twins been on a Snapcaster Mage, and it's just
amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Snapcaster Lightning Bolt, Snapcaster Cryptic Commands off like Splinter Twins.
Wasn't there Tarmo Twin? Didn't that do
something
a little while ago?
Well, that was Patrick Dickman's list. So he's actually changed that. Team Revolution, what he's part of, used to play Tarmo Twin, now they're playing Tassiga Twin. So that's the same list. So Racy replaces the green with black and plays Tassiga, which is great. And also plays Terminate, which lets you kill creatures.
Yeah.
So which one of these decks costs the most?
This one. Well, it's just all
foil. No, forget about the foil thing. All standard cards. Which ones are expensive? They're about the same.
The problem at the moment with Splinter Twin is it's really expensive because
it just
like, Cryptic Command has gone up like $70 a piece, or the foil ones are obviously like $120 or something.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So Splinter Twin is not a cheap
deck. I'm disappointed that yours don't match.
I know, but I've only got one of the non-promo ones. I really like the full art cards.
So. Yeah, no, me too.
All right, cool. Well, we've got some really good questions about Modern, so we might blob and then come back and get the questions off Facebook that people have contributed.
Awesome.
Or submitted.
That's the word, isn't it?
All right, Modern questions from Facebook.
We recently asked modern questions.
In the last 13 years, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, we put out, I'm trying to get better at putting out a question before the pod comes out. So a couple of people jumped on board this week. Justin, who you mentioned earlier on, is building a What was it called again?
The Aura Hexproof deck, Green White Auras.
Yeah, I really want to make that one. It looks good.
So he's obviously started having a bit of a chat to you about it, and he said, how can I manage modern on a limited budget? And like we've been talking about cards here that are like one card's $120 and Tarmogoyf's $200. Yeah, in foil.
But the non-foil ones are still 70
or
so.
Yeah, they're expensive. Cryptic Command, not cheap.
So is the deck he's looking at building reasonably cost-effective?
It's pretty cheap,
I think the best budget way to get into modern is to look at starting to play at sort of proxy events. So, like, if you can play an event which has, you know, 20 or so proxies, I think there's some stores that maybe
so
run those
some
Monday
sort of
nights. I think
plug?
I'm not going to plug it. I'm not allowed to do that. So, but I think
you can plug it.
I think there's something like
that. We're sponsored by Good Games.
Anyway, yeah, so you want to pick up a proxy thing, and that way you can sort of set out, you can go to a place like TCG Player or some online card costing format, and you can basically just look at the cost of all your cards and just proxy the most 20 expensive cards. And then usually you can get into anything cheaply that way.
Yeah.
So usually if you're cutting out the most expensive 20 cards, like there's always going to be, you know, a $40, $50, you know, $70 card in a modern deck, but you can proxy those cards up. And you can proxy up the fetch lands, which are the expensive at the moment, especially the Onslaught fetch lands. And then you can proxy those up, and you can basically pick up the rest of the deck reasonably cheap and play it enough, and then if you like the deck, you can slowly work in towards buying the rest of those cards. And if you don't, you can trade off the cheaper cards again and then look at proxying up something else. So that's my opinion. Like, you don't want to buy into a full deck straight away.
Yeah.
Because there's
so
many different decks in modern.
No, you want to try it out and get the feel for it. And I guarantee the first deck you play will not be the one you end up playing.
Yeah, and there's so many different styles of decks. There's combo, tempo, there's aggro decks. There's, like, good versions of everything. And modern's such a format that's so open to brewing as well.
Yeah.
You can brew versions of similar decks.
Oh, the card pool is so wide in modern.
Exactly.
There's so many things you can come up
with. You don't want to be buying into, like, a $1,000 deck or some ridiculous expensive deck early. You want to basically pick up, you know, the core of the deck, then proxy all the expensive cards and try it out. Especially the early decks that are cheap and good for new players are things like single-color decks. So things like Burn that are red, so then you can actually afford to make the deck without proxies without having to buy a million fetch lands.
Soul Sisters.
Soul Sisters. I hate that deck so bad.
Yeah, everyone hates playing Soul Sisters.
I hate playing against it as well. It's just awful, man.
But it seems like a great format for that, where you can do, like what you're saying, build your deck, get used to it, learn how to pilot it. And then, like what you've done here, where you've gone that step beyond, it's like something you can actually get foil versions of those cards, and you can collect them and use them. Or like you've got frame extensions off
Jimmy
who's done it. Or Madison, who's on in a month's time.
Yeah, no, Jimmy,
I haven't actually seen any of hers.
No, Jimmy's gone. Maddie's really good.
Yeah, so, and then it becomes like you can be almost like proud of your deck, isn't it? And when do you get that with even really expensive standard decks? Are just here's a ton of money. Here's give me that deck, and then within a couple of months, it's like give me the
next.
What
I like
deck.
About standards is they disappear too quickly.
Yeah,
whereas these, you like build up a source of pride once you've got it all put together.
Get a sense of a personality to
them. You can keep it like the modern cards. The price is slowly inclining on all the cards. So it's not like standard. Like if you invest in a standard deck that costs $500-$600, like you know in 6 months it's going to be worth like $100.
Yeah.
Because if you buy
best,
a modern deck, you know, for $500, you know that in like a year it's probably going to be worth like $600 or $700.
Yeah.
So,
And
you're not going to lose all your money. You can keep a deck, play it. You can modern is very much a format where you get benefited from knowing your deck very well, because there's so many decks to play against, and there's so many decks that sit, you know, tier 1, tier 1.5, right at the top. And if you're much better off playing a deck, learning it, than just picking out the best deck of the week. So it's very much a format like that. Learn your deck, learn the interactions.
Yeah, stay away from the flavor of the month picks.
Yeah,
just go for something that you want to play.
Because playing your deck efficiently is just going to be so much better than playing like a theoretically better deck suboptimally. So you just want to get your deck. You want to be the best player at your deck in the room, and you just want to win that way.
So I was going to save it till the end, the plug for Good Games modern events.
Yeah.
But you might as well drop it in now because we're talking about it. So when's what day is
so
that?
So we've got to get down. Monday nights is one. So we've got every Monday night. It's the proxy. You'd have 20 proxies. It's perfect. It's easy to get into. It's a casual environment. So everyone's pretty good. Come down. It's like just testing. So test your deck out. See if you like to play it. If you don't, I mean, you haven't lost too much. You had 20 proxies anyway. If you get a little bit more serious, we've got Saturday events as well. So they're obviously on the website. They're advertised. But a couple of Saturdays a month. Saturday afternoon, we have six proxies. So once you get a bit more serious and you start building up your deck a bit more, you can come to those.
Oh, that's good. So it's a graded intro.
Exactly,
so Monday nights, you can just try anything.
Yeah, and then after that, we have once a month, on the last week of the month, we have standard F&Ms, which is like obviously no proxies. So you can move from the 20 events on Monday nights up to the 6 events on Saturdays. And then eventually, if you want to play the F&Ms on Fridays, proxy.
So there's a modern event on the last Friday.
Last Friday wave every month. The Friday Night Magic that we have in Modern Night. So we need to pitch that a bit. People aren't too aware. We've just started doing.
Yeah, we should get more people down for those because it's a really good event, and the guys that come down for it are really cool.
Exactly. Well, it's very cool.
So very.
I mean, you know.
Sorry. Yeah, everyone else is really helpful as well. So you're not going to get all the questions.
Listeners, write in.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds like good advice there, just on how to get in limited budget style. I like this question. Matt Brown's written in and said, the next card to be banned, what's it going to be? He's taken a stab at most of the cards that are in front of me here. Splinter Twin, Summer Bloom, or some Infect combo card, or some Burn spell, or other.
Okay, so let's look. I mean, Matt knows what he's talking about, so let's see what he's suggesting.
Honestly,
so
I think
Splinter Twin. I mean,
Twin's
I love
probably
Twin,
a front runner,
and I want to play. I mean, it's great. I mean, I've always played these blue red decks. It's so good. It's just the best finisher in blue red. I think it's probably too good. I mean, it's won the GP Vancouver. It won the previous Pro Tour. It's won a bunch of major events. I think it's very good.
It was always close behind Pod decks, anyway.
Exactly. And now without Pod, like Pod was a bad matchup for this deck.
Do they just weaken the overall power of everything, though? If you just keep scything off the top cards, eventually
so
you just
like
end
the
up
metagame
with
a...
You just want a baseline,
a
though,
yeah,
so
the metagame will change to compensate for it, and something else will turn up. But
yeah.
The idea is to get it to a point where nothing is just...
The one thing.
...favoured heavily to win just by being played.
So it's not the black, blue, white controlled years that we're looking at. It's just like the one in standard world.
Yeah,
we've just got two decks that we can go to. Yeah.
It's not that. It's not like that at all anymore, thankfully.
But you think Splinter Twin is the tall poppy at the moment?
I think the thing is this blue-red control deck, like it exists in lots of forms. So I played it for like a long time. So it plays like Blue Moon is the same deck essentially, which just doesn't have the twin, has different things. There's a few other versions of the same deck which are all pretty good and playable as well. And I mean, I think Twin is just—it's a very good finisher, and I think maybe too good. So I would—I wouldn't be surprised if it gets banned. But considering I play the deck, I would hope not. But I think it will.
Yeah.
Eventually, yeah.
So we're going with the.
I think Splinter Twin's good. Summer Bloom. I don't know about Summer Bloom. Summer Bloom is solely dependent on the success of this Amulet Bloom deck.
I don't think it's good enough to get banned.
We'll see. Like, it put one copy in the top eight of Fate Reforged. It put two copies in the top eight of Vancouver. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
but the thing is, it relies on
too many other things.
Exactly.
Like you have Summer Bloom and then lands and a Primeval Titan, whereas Splinter Twin is just like, have a creature.
I know, exactly. That's true. I mean, exactly. I think it's too early for Summer Bloom yet. I think if it keeps putting, you know, two copies in the top eight of every event coming forward, I think it'll be considered. It's not too bad at the moment. Infect combo card, Infect's another new deck. So these are interesting ones from Matt, actually, because Summer Bloom and Infect are both decks that blew up in the last Pro Tour. They were sort of existed in the format, but weren't major players until then. So we don't know too much yet. I mean, Infect, a lot of the pros are saying they think it's the best deck in the format. They think it's consistent, it has protection, it's fast. It didn't happen to put any results up in the Pro Tour, but like I said, it had the best results. So a best win rate, even though it didn't put any players in top eight. So we'll see. I mean, that again, it needs more time. We'll see if it's beatable.
Yeah, because it has a totally different thing, and there's no way to remove Infect.
You can't
counters.
Like regain your life from Infect.
No, you can't wipe the poison counters off. So unless you play Malira, but that just means you can't gain anymore.
Yeah, you don't lose the existing one, so it's very hard. And you don't want to bring a card like Malira against. So it's not. It's very hard. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Those are going to depend on the Bloom, especially, and the. Infect are going to depend on how those decks perform over the next couple of months, I think.
I was saying with Twin. If Twin keeps putting up the numbers and winning, then as a front runner, easily.
And then his final stab was at any burn spell.
I don't think there's going to be any. Like, I mean, the thing with burn is it's just something that keeps the format honest, basically. Like, burn exists in the format. Like, if you just don't do anything in the first four turns, you're dead. You know what I mean? It's fine to have that in. It's not too quick. It's not killing you, you know, before turn three or anything. Usually, I mean, unless they have some ridiculous draw and they play an Eidolon and you play 100 cantrips or something. But usually they're not killing you that fast. So I don't think Burn is... It's good. It's a consistent deck. It's just... But it's not too dangerous. I mean, I don't think they're going to be banning Burn.
All right, cool. And the last question I'm bringing back from episode 24, which was, our old friend Tim the Meat Axe. He did come up with the question, which I always keep coming back to when I'm thinking Modern. But he worded it better than I ever have. How do I not get snot kicked out of me balls?
So that's a nice question.
I don't want to come down. I mean, you think you've probably stepped it out reasonably well. Like, come down on a Monday if you haven't played at all and play Modern that way to see what other people are doing to you and try to learn from that. And you can, if, I mean, he's reasonably, you know, wise gamer.
Is this not the actual question? Is he asking how to not just lose at Modern?
He doesn't want to get kicked. I don't want to come down to play Modern and just get destroyed every time and have
just
fully
dodge
miserable time.
Or kick, kick first. Kick first.
We
is probably
we
what
covered
I would
the
do.
Literal answer to this one, question 24, episode 24, which is why I brought it back.
Extensive coverage of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so how to get into it without getting smashed initially. So we did touch on it before, but it's playing decks that have a proactive strategy every game. So when you're a new player, you don't want to be thinking, oh, what are they doing? What do I want to hold my counter spells for? What do I need to play this removal for? What do I want my plan to be? What you want to be thinking is, every game I've got the same linear proactive plan.
I wrote down
I want
Burn
to establish the plan.
As you were
Burn's
talking
good.
About it, yeah?
I mean,
yeah.
Burgles is good. Things like Merfolk Aggression. Things like Zoo
what?
As well, which is just...
There's a Merfolk. There
is, oh, there's well, modern Merfolk,
Merfolk,
yeah.
Yeah, there's
oh, like, my goodness.
So it's quite good, and it's a deck that's cheap to build because it's a single color. It's aggressive, so your plan's the same every game. You don't have to... Like, Modern is a format where there's a lot of trick interactions. And if you're playing a deck like Splinter Twin, which tries to force a lot of these trick interactions, but you don't have the experience playing the format, you're not going to get the benefit from it.
Yeah,
so
you
better
don't
want
to look out for.
Yeah. Yeah, proactive, aggressive deck, learning that strategy. And then as you're playing against other players, so you
that's
play against
there,
Twin,
yeah.
you'll see, you lose to it, and you go, oh, that's how it works. And then next time you might not lose to that same thing, or you might think, oh, I like how that deck works, I'll pick up a copy, proxy some of the cards, give it a go. So that's the way to get into the format,
but it's just experience. Like, someone was telling me the other day, he mana leaked a guy who had two open lands, and then post the spell, he played his third land. And
happens all the time.
Things
that's
like
that's
that.
A common play,
you know,
as well.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. He'll cast a spell, and then you go spell pierce, and they've got only one mana up, and then they go, oh, I should have played the land. You're like, yeah, man.
Yeah,
no,
you should have.
Of course you should.
It's like you're trying to trick me, but
yeah,
you're not.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Like... yeah, I've learned a lot of... When I've been playing, when I actively play, learned a lot of things from just seeing someone do it to you, haven't
yeah,
you? I want to do that sometime.
You being kicked in the balls is not a bad thing, because you'll learn more that
next
way.
Time, I mean, don't get kicked in the balls. Like,
yeah,
that's the thing.
You'll learn
maybe
to not get kicked in the balls.
Yeah. If it happens the same way three times,
yeah, you'll learn more through failure than you will through just winning.
Absolutely, and like you've got to expect to lose as well. So
the
thing is that the real answer is, how do I not get dominated when I'm starting to play Modern? Is, well, you're
you
not
probably
be,
will. You probably will be destroyed
you can't
when you
really
start playing
it, because you're gonna. I mean. You're playing a format that's really hard. It's, I mean, not hard, but I mean, there's a lot of interactions. There's a lot to think about.
And it's been around for a long time.
Yeah,
and
a lot of people
playing
have a lot
it for
of
a long time.
So when you first start, if you're coming in expecting to just win all the time, I mean, you're going to be...
Sounds
out
to me like just get yourself a burn deck that's reasonably solid and just get in there and start.
Yeah, get any deck
see what happens.
Jam it.
No,
just pick
burn's
the deck
a good way
like.
To start, because
you'll
see what's out there. And, you know, you'll win a few games, lose a few games.
But I mean, it's really a format where there's so much that if you're a guy like, oh man, I really like playing big green creatures, then just pick a deck like that that's done well, learn it really well.
Just any stompy
be the dude
deck
that plays that deck
and
then just be really good at it every time. So.
Yeah, cool. All right, now we're going to do a different sort of MTG card quiz this week, so get ready. This is going to go off. Oh, and for all those cards, if I haven't said enough, the decks that we just talked about, Riley's and Rob's decks, we'll get a photo of those and we'll stick them on 7landhand.com. And look forward to seeing you all on a Monday and a...
Rob's deck's much prettier than mine.
What was the other day?
Embarrassment.
Mondays, Saturdays, twice a month. We got them online, and also the last Friday of every month.
MTG Card Quiz, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. First time you heard that one?
It's good, I like it.
It's good, yeah. Still needing lyrics. And an instrument now.
I don't think so. I think it's pretty...
I mean, your voice is an instrument, right?
It's one of them.
Finely tuned.
It's better than some of the things you hear
on
the radio. Anyway.
Now, this is different. Look, I have a Fate Reforged booster here for the MTG card quiz.
Listeners at home, you can hear it.
Yeah.
That's what a booster sounds like.
What I thought we'd do is roll off, guys. Right, so, D20, what do you got? 13.
Strong.
Riley, what do you got? You got a...
Six.
Yes, I'm ahead.
That's
plenty. Let's do this. 13.
Fine. It's up to you, Rob. Do you want to go first or second?
Oh, let's go second.
Now I'll explain the rules to you.
This is like sealed, like a slow sealed format. I want to be on
the... No, being second is where you want to go. You get more information.
See, exactly, man.
Rob and Riley. Rob's going second. Yeah. Right. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bust this booster... Shuffle the cards. I'll get rid of the land and the...
Oh, man.
and the ad, right?
Sure.
I'll shuffle them. I've already done the roll. And I'll choose a card out of it randomly. Now, you can then take it in turns to ask for a card characteristic. You know, the rarity, the type, the subtype,
name?
The mana cost, the power, or toughness, but not the name.
Oh.
That bit's up to you.
The name is fine.
Then you get to have a guess. So then you guess the name of the card. If you're wrong, it goes over to the other person who now knows something about the card. See where this is heading? we decided we'd do four cards, and if it's two all at the end, tiebreaker.
All sure. Right? Okay.
Which means a tiebreaker, if he's Rob's going second, he might have just... I don't know. Anyway, we'll see how it pans out.
The strategy of going second. I've got this down. We'll
He's gone deep.
He's already
thinking gone deep. About,
yeah, he picked second without really knowing the what's going on. Actually, I can take out the... Because I'm not playing, I can take out the cards which aren't cards.
Yeah.
So there's an advert card. There's a Windscarred Crag for someone. Did we get a foil?
Did we? Shotgun.
Oh, my goodness. We did get a foil.
Is it good? Nice. Good.
That one's going in the collection.
Oh man.
Just shuffling them over here where you can't see them.
He's shuffling over there where we can't see them.
We need an assistant to actually prove that he's shuffling it, right? We can't see it.
Yeah, are they properly randomised?
With a foil like that, this is going to be... I'm sure that the rare is going to be...
I want to see this. It's Ugin foil. Let's see it. Oh, wait. Are we on Fate Forged? Yeah, we are.
Fate Forged. Yeah. Hmm.
So what are we looking for?
It's got to be an Ugin foil. I can feel it already. I can see it. Have the Ugin picture on the front. Right? That's the giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
We have a card on the front.
All right.
We're ready to play. Riley, let me... I'll get a score sheet together here.
I would like to know...
Yes.
...the colour.
The colour? Oh, I didn't even mention that, did I? That's another
guy. I presume that's, that's one of the things I can ask.
That's fair, isn't it? The colour is white.
Is it...
Wait, do I...
You get a guess. You can take a wild
stab. Is there a penalty for guessing?
No, I don't think so. Well, this is the first time we've done this, so we're kind of...
Is it Defiant Strike?
The prototype. It is not
Defiant
Strike.
Well, we're Fate Forge as well, aren't we?
Are we? Yeah, we are.
Oh, that's a good start. So it's not Defiant Strike. All right, okay.
Not, yeah.
I'm going to go.
I'll leave the empty booster pack.
What's the stats?
Out the front, so we can remember.
Is it toughness? Or what's the power?
All right, hang on. What did I say?
Actually, what's the toughness? Let's go the toughness.
Power or toughness. Yeah, stretch it out a bit. The toughness... How do you know it's a... It might...
He doesn't, but now we do.
The toughness is 2.
And it's white and it's 2. Is it Elite Skyguard?
It is not Elite Skyguard. So we know...
Well, whatever that's called. Sky Captain, whatever. Oops, I don't know. All right, you're right, man. So it's 2 toughness.
See, this is good. I'm hoping that people at home will be able to go...
They'll probably have this by now. I'll be terrible at this game.
Yeah.
Let's have the... mana cost.
The mana cost is... shall I give it to you in the total... Total mana cost is 3.
Yeah, total mana cost, yeah.
Yeah?
All
right. 3 for... See, I reckon Aaron would have it by now.
Aaron would definitely have
it by
now.
Oh, wait, am I guessing? You're up.
Hang on. Monastery
Mentor? Yeah, Riley, you take your own guess.
I just did.
What was it?
Monastery Mentor.
Yeah, it's not Monastery
Mentor. Oh, yeah, good. Threw you off.
Damn.
I don't know
any of these
where
cards.
Where are other options? What else can we ask?
You got...
So, creature, subtype... Let's go... What's the power?
The power is 2. It's a 3-mana 2/2 in white. So we've got...
3-mana... What's the 3-mana 2/2 in fight? Oh, you're up, Riley.
We're going to run out of questions before we figure this out. What's the type? Creature type?
Creature type. Is that type? Oh, so it's a creature. So
we know that it's a creature,
like,
but like
so you will have to subtype right. Then.
Yes, I would like the type of creature that
human
it is.
Monk. It's one of them. I'd never remember.
What? It's a 2/2 white human monk that costs 3. That's not Monastery Mentor.
It should be like 2 and a white or something. What's it going to be?
Yeah. So 3-mana 2/2 white. We've worked out it's a creature that's a human monk. From Fate Reforged.
I don't even need this guess. I'm gonna pass.
What? He's so confident. Okay, so what don't we know? We've got creature types.
What it does.
We've got mana costs.
Yeah.
Does it have? So can we have? Does it have like an ability? Is it like flying vigilance? Something.
Yeah, I think we should be able to put that in.
Is it Dragon Bell Monk?
It is Dragon Bell Monk. Without even.
I was trying to think like, what is another one of those monks? All right, cool.
There it is.
Mentor.
All right, awesome. Riley. Yeah, Rob. 1. Okay, so...
I think you're an advantage because you've played with this set.
I've played a couple. I've only drafted like a few times, though.
All right.
Khan, I drafted that a million times.
Okay, so it's now you're going first.
Oh, sweet.
So we're taking turns now.
I only need one guess. Let's do it.
Yeah. We're up to the second card. Card number 2.
Yep. What's the colour?
It's green. Stab in the dark.
I don't draft any green. Is it...
Forest.
I literally can't even think of
I need somebody to go.
Riley, you're up.
Oh, it's not even going to go for it. All right.
we got... card type.
Card type is sorcery.
Ooh, green sorcery.
It's a green sorcery.
All right, let's go. Oh, sorry.
How
guess.
Is it?
Rally with a guess on card number two.
Oh, it's just so hard to think of cards. Were there ramp spells? Was there a ramp spell in Fate Reborn?
I literally couldn't answer any card for my guess, so let's don't
no,
ask me.
No, but I thought that was just because we just had green.
Okay, no, let's see it.
So we're thinking of a green sorcery. I'm going to pass over to Rob while I try and think of some cards.
these are our MTG experts trying to think of any green card in
Fate
Reborn.
They're not green sorcery, though. Like, what's the mana cost?
The mana cost is 3.
Man, I should have drafted this plan more.
Don't do it, man.
I keep thinking like of all the other Khan's cards. I don't know. I'm gonna have to pass to Riley. We know everything now. It's a green sorcery.
It's a green sorcery.
Yeah.
We've got all the information.
What does it do?
does it give an effect? Like, does it give like say it gives like a bonus to pumps like strength or toughness, or it gives like some other effect? Or it's a fighting? Or is it a fight mechanic?
Yeah. It's a landy one.
So, Landy, what is it? Map the Wastes?
It's Map the Wastes.
Oh. Well, that was on my turn. Is it Map the Wastes?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Yes.
Got
there.
It's one all.
Well done. We tied it up.
That's so bad.
It's neck and neck. All right.
We've had two common cards. I'll just flick through
we'll
it
flip through and
find
something.
I'll follow the format here more closely.
See what we've got. All right. Here we go. It's
my turn.
It's Riley's turn.
I would like to start with a type.
The type is creature.
Ooh. All right.
Stabbing at it. I'm going to go.
What have we... kind of rarity. But you flip to one more interesting.
You've got creature.
Is it...
like a 1 in 60. You got this.
What's that dreadful... 1/1 flying guy we talked about last time.
Oh, the one that I said was quality, and that Kian yelled at me.
Yeah, that one.
It's not him.
Okay.
Haven Skirmisher.
Yeah, Haven Skirmisher.
Yeah, it's a trap.
You do know this.
I know. No, I mean, I've done it a couple times.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Let's go color.
Black. Black creature. Fate Reforged.
Is it Gurmag Angler?
It is Gurmag Angler.
Who is this? What's going on? That's awesome.
All right. Oh, there's the sweet, sweet foil. So, what are we on? So that was...
So we're 2-1.
Oh, it's 2-1. Let me have a look.
This for the game, Rob. It's all on this.
Should we play for the... Oh, we'll go
let's go for the rare. It'd be fun.
Do you want to go for the rare?
Yeah.
So you know the thing already.
Well, now we know the rare. Rare.
Yeah. Not that helps my guessing.
All right. This is a rare card, Riley. And hang on, whose go is
it? Rob up this time, man. Let's go. What colour?
Red.
Red, is it mob rule?
No.
Mana cost?
3.
Is it Hoarding Outburst?
No.
That's not even a rare, is it?
3, and it's a rare.
3, rare. And red.
What type is it?
Instant. That's got to narrow it down, right? That's got to be...
That's rare. I can't think of any rares. No, you're up, Riley.
How much damage does it do?
Okay, that is interesting, isn't it? That would give it away, actually. It's not determined by the card.
Ooh.
Red, 3 mana costs, rare, which is an instant. It does damage.
Does damage,
not
but
determined
not determined by
the
card.
And it is a Burnie-type spell.
Yeah. Well, it's a red instant. So
it's a red instant.
I'd assume,
yeah.
So is it...
But Burnie-type spell.
So my up, on my up, is it... When you say it's 3, is it like... Is it,
that's converted.
Does it have
cost.
An X 3? Is it like 3 with an X in it, or is it just 3?
No, it's 3.
Okay. I have no idea. I think we're going to pass on this one.
All right. Okay, Riley, because you've got to draw even. I said Burnie-type card.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really include burning. There's other forms of...
Is it... it's not that sacrifice a creature deal damage one.
That's collateral damage. It's like common, I think.
Yeah. I'm just going to check the book.
No, what if I
think we have to concede this one potentially. Oh, wait, wait. We've got more information. What do we got?
I don't know. Should I just read what it does?
Yeah.
Please.
Choose target creature. Whenever that creature is dealt damage this turn, it deals that much damage to each other creature and player.
Oh,
and
I know
each
this
player.
Card, but I cannot remember
I
the name
it.
Of it.
No, I don't know.
It's Arc Bond.
Oh, okay. Oh man, that is like unplayable, that card. I see why I don't know.
Yeah, I thought when I saw
that
it
is totally
I was gonna go for the foil, and I'll go for the foil.
Alright, we'll go
you
for
asked
yeah,
to okay, go Arc you Bond, asked
I
to get the
I
rail.
I dug my own grave there, anyway.
Alright, so this
I'm
is...
I'm sorry I gave that to us, Rob. That was dreadful.
Yeah.
It was my fault.
Alright, Riley, I think you're up, aren't you?
Yeah, I would like... The artist.
Ooh.
Carl Kapinski.
Thanks. I pass.
That is one I would
is that
never
Carl,
get
Carl with
about.
A C?
No.
Carl with a K, come on.
No.
What colour are we at? He's trying to do one that doesn't give it away. Like Riley's...
What colour card?
Going first, but passing. So what colour have we got?
It's gold.
Gold.
Yeah. Gold coloured card by Carl Kapinski.
Oh, well, Carl's only done a few in this set. So
what's the card number?
Wait, do I get to guess the card?
Oh, no.
Okay, you're up. I won't guess. It's fine. You're up. What's the next thing?
So what is it?
I'd like the number. The number of the card.
149. That actually could help you.
What color does that think it is? So that's effectively asking.
That's later in the set.
So we already know it's gold. So that's like the same.
Yeah, same sort of thing. Take off the lands.
Okay, what
guess how many? What type? It's a legendary creature.
Oh, okay.
Is it an offender?
No.
Oh, no, wait, that's the wrong set. Oh, no, you're up already.
Get serious now, didn't it? Everyone went like, ooh, legendary creature.
What's the power?
The power is 6.
Is it a Tarka?
It is a Tarka World Render.
Ooh, he's done it. 2-2.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez, man, we're going to a tiebreaker. I didn't see that coming.
I'd quite like that foil if...
No, there's no chance. There's no chance. I'm not even going to let you look at it.
What?
Man, it's not no foil Gourmet Gangler. That's the best card.
We've already opened one of them.
Yeah, no, I've got to get it off Aaron for sure.
All right, let's have a look.
All right, let's do it.
What have we got? This is really coming down to the wire. What have I heard of anyone mentioned?
Do Arc Bond again.
Arc Bond, yeah. We'll get it. It's like we didn't even know what it was when you read the text. Yeah, gave us all the information.
When you told us what the card was.
Yeah. I mean, that's a card I would never, ever pick in a draft, so
yeah,
I can see why I didn't remember it.
It deals that much damage to each other creature and each player. Jeez. Or maybe in Commander?
No.
For the win, who's going first? It's
Rob.
I think I'm up.
Yeah.
Okay, Rob. Here we go. For this new prototype MTG card quiz format.
It's good. I'm enjoying it. It's fun.
Yeah. What's the theme of the picture? What's the most prominent colour in the
describe
image,
the picture
not the, not
to
the
me.
Colour, border colour?
I would say green.
Okay, green in the picture. All right, cool. You're up, Riley.
You don't want to guess on that?
Is it Bathe in Dragonfire?
No.
Okay.
You're up. What information is there on a card?
Well, you're doing quite well in going outside the box for... you know what? I think I would do better going the way Rob just went there. And what's the general colour of the picture?
Yeah, like describe the picture.
No, not describe the picture. I mean,
that's
be
a bit too much.
Too much.
A bit too much. All right. What's the mana cost? Oh, what rarity is it?
It is uncommon.
All right. So we have a mostly green picture, uncommon.
Yeah. What is it? Gives it away. Come on.
Yeah. It's obvious now.
It's almost too easy.
Don't get it right now. Rob's going to snap
it up. No, I don't
you're
think
a gentleman. You're just going to give me a chance.
I think, you know.
What a gentleman. All right. What's the
first
mana
time
cost?
On the show?
The mana cost is 6.
Oof.
Is it... what's mostly green? I don't know. Is it Ojutai?
No.
Who?
The blue-white dragon that's 6? I don't know.
I don't need to know what Ojutai is. I'm looking at the letters that are in the name of the answer.
Yeah. You're up, Riley. Let's see it.
Let's have the type.
The type is creature. I can't remember what information you've got now, but...
We know it's a red...
Uncommon, mostly green picture.
Mostly green
picture. Wait, is it uncommon? Because I'd rare.
It's uncommon.
Oh, wow,
uncommon.
Okay.
I mean, rare.
How many rares
it's
are
totally,
in this
it's
pack?
Totally rare.
Ataka and Arc
Bond. We just did the Arc Bond. I mean, I didn't count that.
Yeah,
either,
Arc Bond, Ataka. Oh, and then we've got a couple of...
How do you not count Arc Bond? That's beautiful.
It's good, yeah.
We've got a couple of mythics in here. Yeah.
Green creature. Give away a mana cost 6. No, we don't even know it's green.
No.
Okay.
You've...
The colour of the picture is green.
The colour of the picture is green.
That's assuming David's not colorblind.
I don't
know. Could be red.
Go for it, Rob. I'm passing over.
Okay,
to
what
you.
Color is the card?
It's a white card.
A white 6 mana uncommon, which is a creature. I don't know. You're up.
White 6 mana. Jeez. Toughness?
Toughness is 4.
Yeah.
It's I want to keep dragging this out, so I'm going to pass.
All right. Is it Wardscale Dragon?
It is. I thought you were saying I was going to dragging this out. You just said it, and
that's
I was like,
good dragon. He's like, I got this. It's good. I got lucky. The Wardscale Dragon.
Awesome.
All right. Yeah. And we also had Humble Defector right into being.
Oh, Humble Defector's great, man.
Right into being is what I thought that.
Yeah.
This one was.
Enhanced Awareness, Reality Shift, Collateral Damage, Ethereal Ambush, Goblin Heel Cutter, and TIE Fighter Axe.
Goblin Heel Cutter's brutal.
I've got Enhanced Awareness, but...
No. Played like a triple Fates draft, and it's just all Goblin Heel Cutters all the time. Because you just end up
with that's so good.
Like 3 or 4 Goblin Heel Cutters, 3 or 4 Scouts, and you just kill them.
Yeah, because no one takes them early on, because they think it's better stuff, actually.
Yeah, it's just so good, man, honestly. It's insane.
I think Foil Attack is the best card we've ever got in... we didn't bust the booster, did we? All right, well, that's over.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, David.
Yeah, there it is. Arm's length.
It's also, unplayable,
shiny.
Though, so
it's
quite pretty. I don't know if that counts as the best card of it.
What do you mean?
It's a dragon. I guess it's playable.
It's
on
a pretty dragon.
On those grounds, it is a very pretty card. It's shiny as well.
Kian was a big fan of that the other week.
Meets the criteria.
Nice as well. I mean,
so as soon as that card comes out, you've lost, is Kian's words, pretty much.
Slam it down off of See the Unwritten. Put that down with a... Xenagos the God, and you just went for the win.
You just have these 3 cards and this 4 card combo. And
no,
really
I mean, Sea Unwritten finds them, right? So it's all good.
All right, let's break this off and close this pod up with some neats and twos and general housekeeping, which has got interesting news in it, actually.
Has it?
Which you may be interested in.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Neats and twos!
Neats and twos!
Woohoo! Neats and twos, which I've just explained to Rob, means tweets and news.
Witty as well.
Yeah,
great.
Clever. That's what we're all about here. Clever. Well, we covered most of the show questions with Justin, Matt, and Meadax's old question earlier on for modern. So we're moving into the next part, which was when post-it notes were first invented, they asked this next contributor to provide the glue. Axel's Philosophy Corner.
Is there a reference for that?
But not
on Wikipedia under post-it notes.
Oh, okay.
If you spell it in Russian. Would you rather have a toothy, swollen mouth in your anus that constantly spoke to you, mocked you, and told you to do bad things? Or...
or...
Yeah.
Be a Mormon.
Ooh, that's actually close. Because one of them is have to constantly be surrounded by this thing in your butt that talks and says annoying stuff. No, the other one is you constantly have to be surrounded by a huge amount of people that do that.
Wow.
It's
exactly.
I see what he's going at there.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like, do you have the one?
Is it,
thing?
Say, constantly talking to you? Was it a constant?
I mean, you can wear
constantly
pants
spoke
there,
right? to you. So you could muffle it.
Yeah, yeah.
Butt plugs.
Well, what sort of stuff is it saying?
No, it says it's derogatory, right? Yeah. It's like, you suck. It's the
mocked
worst.
You and told you to do bad things.
Told you to do bad things.
You don't have to necessarily do them.
The thing is, can other people hear it? Like, are you going to be standing in the shopping
center
with your pants on? They're like, stab that girl. And the person will look around and be like, what? You're like, it wasn't me, man. It's my butt. I'm sorry. It just does this all the time.
My butt said
it. It was either this or be a Mormon. So I guess you can
understand. It'd be really awkward being on dates. But I'm sure, once you explained it, they would be on your side.
People
imagine
might feel
if you met someone else
you.
As well with like another talking butthole. Like, you'd be like, guys, this is where match
made
in heaven.
To be.
Exactly. We're perfect for each other. So... it adds some, like, it opens your dating pool. I mean, it narrows it a bit, but you get more options.
It narrows it a bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
I suppose you know if you have a talking ass that's constantly being derogatory to you, and you found a girl that will date you, she's in it. You know,
you got to
keep her.
She
right
knows
there.
All of your faults immediately.
You're
never
going to
do anything worse than that.
The main thing your ass says to you is, "You have me as your ass." That's the worst feature you have. Oh, wow.
You can always find someone that's into everything, though, right?
So we're going for talking ass over
Mormon. Someone's into talking
butts. Let's look at the
other
side. We've only looked at one side of this problem. Like,
what's
the benefits of being a Mormon? I mean, you get to walk around a lot.
According to South Park, that's the one true religion.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
Is that one where you have to have, like, tons of wives?
You don't have to, but you can.
That would be worse.
It's the one where they found the tablet, basically, randomly somewhere in the United States, like, recently. And they're like, oh, my God, it's like a revelation.
this Jesus new... was in America.
Show us it.
Yeah, exactly. It's all we've lost
they
it now.
They
it's
can't because
it disappeared.
Reason, I can't remember what the reason.
Yeah,
is.
Yeah, they took them away. Yeah. Oh, they had to read them in a hat.
Weird,
yeah, I can't. It was some
convenient.
Have you seen
the South Park episode on it?
Not
the
play. South Park episode.
Oh, that's Matt Stone
and
Trey Parker too.
Yeah, I went and saw that in London. It was amazing. what's it called? Book of Mormon. That's right.
Yeah.
It was good.
That's the South Park guys.
Yeah, the same guys. It's amazing. Like they did it there because they said it's the only format where they're not censored. So if they're on TV or they're doing movies and stuff, they have to go through a censorship board. But on the Broadway, there's none.
You can do it.
They're self-censored. So yeah,
we'll have to remember that for a future Seven Land Hand podcast.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Seven Land Hand, the play,
the musical.
the musical. Oh my god. All right. So sticking with there's no redeeming features.
I don't know if you know much about me, but like I'm not a religious dude. So
no,
Mormon is absolutely not my choice.
No. Yeah, I'd get down on.
I mean,
if they have a church on Sunday, I get down just about the whole idea of like losing half a day just to, as a non-religious person, just to waste half your day.
Yeah, you're not wasting it though. You're like doing religious things though. You're contributing to the community by like talking about it with each other. It's like, come on, it's not a waste. It's fantastic.
I don't know. In church, you got some guy telling you what your relationship with God is supposed to be. I don't know. Organized religion. I don't know.
Yeah,
organized religion.
This is philosophy. This is why we put this as the
I think we have a bad panel for this because I think all of us are very strongly on one side of this discussion.
Yeah.
So I think it's.
So we'll have the talking asshole. Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could be a Mormon that then becomes like a reform Mormon that tries
Mormon.
To educate other Mormons.
No, you just be a Mormon and then.
Right? And then you
no, no,
get
you
out.
Just be a Mormon and then give it up.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm over it now.
Be like, why are you here signing up then if you just want to go? I'd be like, well, it's this or a talking ass. So I guess I have to put up with being a Mormon for a bit. So
I'm going to do it for a week.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Try it. You might like it.
I'll stick around for the free buffet and then I'm gone.
If we do read out any of your questions, for you at home we're talking to now, you'll receive a Hypermagic Nerd badge. Like, I think Matt Brown hasn't already had one.
Oh.
So, yeah, come in, Matt.
I thought he not had one. I thought he'd commented before, isn't he?
I still don't know what these are.
Well,
it's been mentioned before.
Now that you've been on the show,
absolutely.
Hypermagic Nerd Badge.
Oh, man, let's see. Oh,
that's it.
You've got to wear
it. It's like being part of Fight Club. If you see someone else with the Fight Club with the Hypermagic Nerd Badge on, you have to high five and or knowingly nod.
Is that the first rule of Fight Club? If you see another Fight Club member, you have to high five.
It's like the fifth rule.
I didn't watch that movie that closely.
Towards
but I can't remember if
it's
that was
soundless.
Awesome.
You need to go back and do it.
They only really covered the first.
Hypermagic Nerd Badge to Rob and Matt. If you haven't got one already, come in and get one. Hassle someone behind the counter. You need to get one. All right, housekeeping. Now, this is cool. Dave at Good Games has said that from now on, whatever board game it is that we're going to review, so he might have some input into what we'll review, he's going to make it Game of the Month, and for listeners of this podcast, there'll be some kind of interesting little discounty or special thing or get something along with your purchase of the game.
That's awesome.
That's very
so
cool.
That is going to be very cool. And what's even more exciting than that is that we're doing XCOM, which will be out in a fortnight's time, which is a new fantasy flight game. And Matt, Riley, Justin, and myself have been playing the crap out of this game.
Yeah.
And it's friggin' awesome.
It is
fantastic. Absolutely awesome.
We're really enjoying it.
So we're super pumped about that. So we can't wait to do it. We're actually recording that next Sunday, but it'll have to
just
hold on to it.
Rub in, missing out on the XCOM.
Hey,
like, this game's so great.
Know,
it's amazing. Everyone should play
it. Yeah, it is. You got an offer for that,
didn't
you?
I wish I didn't respond in time, unfortunately.
Nah.
Next time. Next
snapped
time.
Up. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so keep an ear out for that because we'll... we'll know exactly what the conditions of that is. And then so there's this area in Good Games at Cannington, which will have a Game of the Month. And, and you pick up that and you'll get something else as well. After that, next month on Seven Land Hand Extra, Madison's going to be back in discussing the artworks. I'll be, all cologne and best bow tie will be on standby.
No use of Gamer Girl terminology?
No use of Gamer Girl terminology. That's bad news.
Yeah,
she laid the smack down on that last time. So I'll be doing my best not to be a grubby man while she reviews the art in Fate Reforged, which will be a little bit awkward because I think we'll be in spoiler season. So there'll probably be Aaron and everyone will be wanting to talk that. Oh, it's from Monday, is it?
From Monday.
Yeah,
it starts
on
Monday.
Very soon.
All right. Well, Madison and I might snub our noses at the spoilers and just do art reviews.
Yeah, no one's interested in spoilers anyway.
People want to know about the art review. Like, no one wants to listen to the
art review. Will be pretty
much
me complaining about Kev Walker and Madison providing some really quality information. So that's probably how that will break down.
All right, is there anything else happening in store at Good Games Cannington, Rob Riley, that we want to talk about? It's excited that you...
Nothing too major, just get down to modern, yeah.
Pre-release is coming up. Don't forget to book in.
What's that, 22nd, is it? Or 22nd,
is it so soon? March?
Yeah,
it's coming up later this month.
They had to push it forward because they're trying to squeeze in a bunch of sets this year.
To make up for the changing
Masters, the Modern Masters. So,
second Modern Masters is coming out
this year. Yeah.
And so when's Aaron's version coming out? 2017?
Yeah, it's just going to be that's the better version, obviously. He's got a bit more time to work on it.
He's got time to plan it out.
Yeah. All right, let's finish this off.
All right.
All right, that's it. That's the end of another episode. I feel what we're up to now, 30-odd.
Something.
It's been good, though. Good episode. Probably the best episode.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Mr. Riley for coming in and Rob for coming in for his first time.
Thanks, man.
Success, even though he's been sitting there blowing on his hookah pipe the whole time. That cross-legged Indian vibe going on. I was trying to think of, the whole time I've been trying to think
spiritual,
of the...
Spiritual, man. I was channeling my spirituality. I mean,
what it made me think of was...
So you don't believe in religion, but spirituality is something...
If it includes also smoking, I'm 100% behind that spirituality.
It's got me singing Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bangles. I'm sure there's something in there. With a hookah pipes.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is. Hookah pipes with an H front and H in the back.
Smoking the same hooker is a very different thing.
Gonna smoke that hooker. That's pimp talk.
GTA 5.
GTA 5, yeah. Anyway, that's about it then, isn't it? That's about as long as the thing outro takes.
Yeah. Is anyone still out there?
Yeah. High five, everyone.
Woo!